I want more life, fucker.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 81 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
Lots coming up on the show. Mark, start them off.
Well, it's a big one. We're going to be reviewing the Blade Runner 2049. It's finally here. You've seen people tweeting this week getting so excited about, Does Ben love it? Is it going to meet his expectations? Or is he going to kill himself live on the podcast? Find out soon, coming up shortly.
No pressure there then.
Because we have a very big review, we're going to be having a very funny rewatch. We're going to be watching Taika Waititi's What We Do in the Shadows.
And that's a nice link to our next podcast when we'll be reviewing Taika Waititi's Thor Ragnarok, isn't it?
Synergy.
Our topic of conversation this time round is our top three spy movies. So any films with regards to spycraft, espionage, secret agents, all that kind of good stuff.
But bigger than that right now, we've got the final round of Word Up, and it's basically the big one. Because at the moment, you've both won one, and I haven't won anything. But anything can change, and we could all be winners at the end of the day.
Yeah,
today.
Or joint losers.
Whichever way you want to sell it. But it's going to be good, and I am excited.
Speaking of excited, we're only going to be movie masturbating to a very big star. A little chap called Robert De Niro. Don't know if you've heard of him. But we're going to be masturbating over him.
It's arguably the biggest one we've had so far, isn't it?
I think so.
It's needed spit. It's needed lube. It's needed everything.
Gross.
It's needed the works. Gross. This is by far the biggest masturbate of all time.
Have we paid extra for this?
Massively.
There we go.
And of course, we'll finish off the show with our recommendations of the week. We'll have listener questions. We'll have a huge prize giveaway. All the usual goodies you've come to expect from the Skip to the End podcast. Mark, this past weekend, you've been up to something fairly interesting, haven't you? You've been to a Twin Peaks convention, I believe.
I have. The official Twin Peaks UK festival down in London.
Yeah.
So it was a really, really good time. I went with Paul, who does all the artwork for Skip to the End. So we had a bit of a skip trip without you two. But
that's fine. He is the honorary fourth member, I would say.
Yep, it's allowed. It was really, really good, actually. One of the best conventions I've been to. We've been to sort of MCM and Showmasters and stuff like this, but this was really well organised. The moment you got in there, they basically looked after you, had free coffee on tap, David Lynch coffee. They gave you cherry pie, unlimited donuts. They had guests there like Sherilyn Fenn, James Marshall, Sabrina Sutherland, Jake Wardell. Michael Horse was there, the man himself, Deputy Hawk. Which was unbelievable.
He has beautiful hair. Beautiful hair.
But the best thing is you get to meet them all, and they're not just like these people that are behind a desk charging for a signature. They're just mingling between everyone. You can be sitting there watching an episode of Twin Peaks and you're sat next to Sherilyn Fenn and all this. It's amazing. It's one of the best conventions I've been to, and I think next year we should all go and have a trip because it was very special.
I'm down.
I like the I think it was the first photo you put out of you in the red room.
Yes.
That was very cool.
It was. They had loads of random stuff as well. Like they had trying to knock the bottle of water with potatoes, and you'd win a DVD or a Blu-ray randomly. They did a trip of going around the set and talking all about the Elephant Man in London. They had loads of stuff, really, really well organised, and it all started from a girl called Lindsay, who started a few years ago, and it's just built and built, and now it's selling out, and it's filling, and everyone is talking about it, so fair play to her.
So this was just one person who decided to put this on, and it's now spiralled into a big event.
It's like Skip to the End.
Yeah.
Where us two, Ben, decided to do this podcast, and now look at it, it's global.
Yeah.
But it was good, and I've had a really good time, but if I am very tired and make any mistakes on this episode, it's because I got back a few hours ago.
Yeah.
Excuses already.
Yeah, that's why you'll make mistakes. Because it never normally happens.
But I am really, really going to give it my best, I promise.
Aww.
All right, let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round is our top three spy movies. So anything in regards to espionage, spycraft, secret agents, anything like that will count. Gemma, I'm going to throw it over to you first. What's your first pick?
Well, thank you very much, first and foremost. My first choice is actually a remake of an original film. So I've gone for 2011's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Very nice.
Very good.
No one can argue that's not a spy film.
Yeah, it's a hella good one.
Yeah. Of course, the book was originally by John le Carré, and this particular remake was directed by Thomas Alfredson, or Alfredson, if you're feeling exotic. And he's, of course, responsible for the make of Let the Right One In and new film The Snowman. So, if you're familiar with those kind of films, you get a feeling of exactly how this film is shot. So it's very dark and moody, and it's got sort of big players like Gary Oldman, Benedict Cumberbatch, Mark Strong, mm-hmm. John Hurt.
Wow.
And Colin Firth's in there too.
That's a pretty stellar lineup in itself.
Oh, I mean, you know, you're going to get cash money, you're going to go for the big guns. But the whole film is really about an ex-spy called George Smiley, played by Gary Oldman. Forced into early retirement, which is a bit of a bummer, but he's coerced back into MI6 after there's a mole that's currently in the cabinet. So what he needs to do is find out who the bloody hell the mole is. But it is just such an atmospheric piece of work. Tension's constantly ramped up because you really genuinely don't know who the mole is. And it could have been a number of players. You've even got a really great turn by Mr. Legend himself that I can't think of the name right now. So I'm going to look at my notes.
Who's that legendary?
Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy.
All right.
That legend.
Oh, you're referring to the film Legend that he was in. I see. I get you.
Mr. Legend. Mr. Legend. That's his weekend name. But his character, Ricky Tarr, he's thrown into the mix. You think, oh, it might be him, you know, he's a little bit shady, you know, he's got dealings in Morocco and he's got a bit of a bird on the side. Mm-hmm. It could be him. But you keep guessing and guessing until the very end of the film. And it is evident of the discovery of the mole. You know, once we find out who it is, it has this great sort of British stiff upper lippedness about it. And this is what I love about the film. It's always contained. It's never guns blazing. It's not like big Hollywood sort of bang, pow, smash. It's just a really very... It's a secret within a secret itself, you know. It's a classy and a very exquisite film. Just glorious, you know. If you want to switch off in the world about 2.5 hours, may I present Exhibit A, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
It is a fantastic film, and Gary Oldman is unbelievable in it. And it's astounding to think that that was his first Oscar nomination.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah.
I genuinely thought it would be something like Bram Stoker's Dracula.
What?
I know.
I'm shite.
Well, you never know. I mean, the Academy can do very weird things.
Mm.
I've seen it once, and I can't remember it very well. I remember it being pretty good, but I watched it on the lead up to the Oscars, and I was thinking it was pretty good, but...
Didn't we review it? Did we review
it? No, we weren't going then, I don't think.
Was it before that?
Yeah. We're all losing our minds on this episode. But what I remember really clearly is that Gary Oldman just stole the show. And when you're up against people like Tom Hardy, who, okay, a bit newer to the game, he just showed why he's an absolute legend and just worthy of being the lead role.
But it is just, it's such a good film. Really great.
It is, and I'm hoping they make more because John le Carré did more with George Smiley. I think the next one was Smiley's People, so I'd like to see them make that as well, get Gary Oldman back in.
Yeah.
What a start. And now I've got the pressure to try and follow up. Okay, so mine's a bit of a fun one to start with. It's True Lies.
Oh, great
Which
fun.
Is an incredible film.
And it's on my list too.
Great. This is how action movies should be made, in my opinion. They're fun, they're entertainment, and the budget is spent well. Yes, we get the one and only Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is the perfect casting for this film. For me, I think it's one of his strongest roles because he's having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, in Terminator and stuff, he's quite serious, but this is when you can see he's enjoying his time on set. One of the funniest films out there as well, considering the actual plot is quite serious, but there's also a lot of stupidity about this film as well. You've both seen it, right?
Of course. Yes.
A secret agent basically passing himself off as a PC salesman, which is just hilarious in itself. Mm-hmm. Then we get the most stupid part that his wife doesn't even click or know this is happening in his day life, which is just
insane.
She
ain't got a bloody clue, has she?
So what does she go and do? She goes off and has an affair with a guy that's basically a dimwit posing to then be a secret agent. Which is quite easy. You can imagine that happening in everyday sort of scenarios.
It sounds believable to me. Sounds normal.
Yeah, normal Tuesday day.
I'm surprised it's taken this long for a film like this to be made. I mean, 1994, surely there should have been 10 or 12 of these films where this sort of thing happens. Because it happens around us every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at my wife and think, I could easily go off to work and be a secret agent. She would never, ever know.
Oh, God, my other half would know straight away.
But he could be doing something else. He could be having an affair with a woman that's trying to be a podcaster. Now I'm making that film. Let's be honest about it. We associate James Cameron with serious films. Really sci-fi, big budgets, big hardcore films. Yeah. This is when I think he should do more of this. He should let his hair down and just have fun. Because this is one of the most fun, silly, over-the-top spy films around. But there was no way I was going to leave it off my list.
You know what my favourite thing about this film is?
What?
The quick-liners. You know, he kind of like breaks a dog's neck and then he goes, stay. or the best bit of the entire film. Now, a lot of it is very unbelievable. You're like, yeah, oh yeah. I mean, sorry, apart from Mark's coming up, this is very, very believable of what happens in real life. It's when the terrorist sort of hooks off of the missile on the plane, when they're flying and talking, you know, as we are, doing a bit of bants. And then he gets hooked on the missile and he fires it, goes, "You're fired." And it goes into his helicopter, like full of his buddies. Brilliant.
It's as if he's kind of got a bit of like his moment of doing Die Hard. Yeah. That's how I look at it. Give Arnie Die Hard and that's what you get, True Lies. Oh,
I watched this not long ago, obviously in prep of this topic, and there's a bit when he's reunited with Jamie Lee Curtis after they've blown up the limo and Cassandra from Wayne's World. And then he sort of gives her a kiss. He's like, "Oh, I've got to go." And then all of a sudden he goes, "Back!" And he just runs away. And I creased over, killing myself laughing. So good. So, so good.
It is a great fun film. But the first thing I always think of when I think of this film is the Jamie Lee Curtis striptease scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's mighty fine. She's and beautiful. She pulls off the very short sort of boyish haircut very well.
She's always had that look and it's always worked for her.
I'm a big fan.
Me too.
Even I think she's got it going on.
That's good. Mm. So, Ben, it's your topic. I'm intrigued. What's your first choice?
Well, I'm going to go slightly more serious. I'm going with the 2005 Steven Spielberg film Munich.
I've got it too.
Oh, great fantastic. Choice. It is one of the greatest spy movies ever made. In case you're not familiar, it's the true story of a group of Israeli Mossad agents led by Eric Bana who take revenge on a Palestinian terrorist faction that had murdered a group of Israeli athletes during the 1972 Munich Olympics. And as you know, Mark, and some of the listeners will know, and Gemma, I was never a big Steven Spielberg guy growing up. I find most of his 80s work to be really cloying and mawkish, just this sentimental shite.
I'm going to throw a bottle at him in a minute.
Come on, guys, you're friends.
But there were two films that turned me around on him, and it was Catch Me If You Can and this. And this is just an impeccable, beautiful, powerful, heartbreaking film. It's a bloody long film.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is it, 2 hours and three quarters, something like that?
Yeah. It's long.
Touching to three.
But it is so beautifully rendered. And even though it is that long, it's never less than gripping. It never feels long. You know, I think it was Roger Ebert said something along the lines that if a film is good, it's never too long. Mm-hmm. And that's how I absolutely feel about this film. It's impeccably directed. Just think about, Mark, some of the action scenes. Like when you see the Israelis being murdered and how brutal and graphic they are.
It is. It's one of the films that does deaths right. Like Saving Private Ryan, which he did well, Spielberg. But the deaths are real. You don't get over the top. You feel the pain. And they go on too long. The deaths are uncomfortable, which it should be. A bit like when we saw Dunkirk recently. Mm-hmm. When we did see a death. They were very rare that we saw them. But it was too long. You were like, oh, this is uncomfortable. But it shouldn't be like a quick scene of a death. This is a powerful thing that needs to get through. But for me, it was just pure heartache, and then it's painful, it's uncomfortable to watch. But this is where Spielberg, I think, stepped out of his comfort zone, because we are used to him doing a bit of family films and the big blockbusters and stuff, and to go down this route and do this in such a great way, it shows his kind of sheer quality as a director. But the cinematography in this film is what stands out the best. This is, for me, if I wanted a demo disc to show off cinematography, I pick this film. I think it's glorious. And you just mentioned Eric Bana. For me, he's never topped this. It's unbelievable.
He's so good, and it pains me to think that he never went on and did more. Why isn't he an A-list actor? Why isn't he one of the biggest names in the business? Because he's so good.
He needs to be doing more action films, because he is taking names and kicking ass in Munich.
But it's that side of him, but it's also the heartbreaking dramatic side as well. Sort of the back end of the film, when he has kind of post-traumatic stress from all the things he's had to do and the things he's seen. There's a moment where he just breaks down crying on his bed. And there's another moment where he's having sex with his wife, but he's thinking back to these all the deaths that have occurred, and it's so powerful and visceral. It's a great performance.
And the thing is, he's up against Daniel Craig, and I actually will give him credit in this film. Sometimes I don't like Daniel Craig because I associate him now as Bond and just not giving a toss, taking a big paycheck and just relying on Bond every few years. But in this, you know, Eric Banner's there. Eric Banner steals the scenes, but I really enjoyed Daniel Craig's role, and I've never thought I'd see Spielberg working with him.
Yeah.
So it is great.
Daniel Craig was brilliant. Kieran Hines is so good as well, as another one of the Mossad task force. It's a shame that the film wasn't embraced by the public. It didn't flop. You couldn't call it a flop or a bomb, but I think it's the third or fourth lowest grossing film of Spielberg's career.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Which is, it's a shame. God. It's a shame more people didn't go and see it. The critics loved it. Yeah. Rightly so. It's a damn good film.
Every friend of mine that's ever seen it says it's one of their favourite films they've ever seen. Mm. And that's all that matters.
So moving on then. Well, Gemma, you've already had two, haven't you?
I have. I'm so greedy.
And you've had two
I
as well,
Mark. I feel spent already. Yeah.
So I think it's me again. I get
you
to go.
You dare
again.
Pick one of mine now.
Well, you've mentioned Daniel Craig there, and I'm going to have my second Daniel Craig film of the day. I've never been a James Bond fan. I've never taken them seriously. I've never found that they meant anything to me. They've never really been worthy of my time. But that all changed in 2006 when Casino Royale came out.
Amazing film.
What a damn fine movie that is. The thing that really sells it, and the reason why this felt serious and felt worthy of my time, is because Daniel Craig's version of James Bond feels like a real-life assassin. He does not feel like an international playboy sipping on martinis. It feels real. It feels dirty and grimy. And you can thank Jason Bourne for a lot of that, I think. You know, the makers of the Bond franchise looked at the Bourne franchise and went, we want a bit of that, because clearly people are reacting to it. And they did that. They made it grittier. They made it more realistic. Something we've talked about on this podcast before is that opening scene where you see Bond beating that guy to death in the bathroom in the black and white scene.
Yeah.
He's smashing his head through the sink and all that kind of stuff. You never saw Pierce Brosnan doing that. You sure as shit never saw Roger Moore doing that.
You'd be giving him a gentleman's handshake.
Yeah, and then making some stupid sex pun afterwards. Christ. But it's such a great film. There's even little things in it that I like. There's a scene where he's chasing after a guy and he's shooting him, then he runs out of bullets. So he just throws the gun at his head. And I love that. That's just
it's real.
It feels real. It's again, Roger Moore wouldn't do that.
No.
Sean Connery wouldn't do that.
No.
George fucking Lazenby wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't give him the gun.
No. It's so good, and it reinvigorated the franchise. And now I love the franchise. Now I think of the four Daniel Craig Bonds, there have been two great ones, this and Skyfall, and two shit ones, Quantum of Solace and whatever that
Spectre.
Piece of crap was recently, yeah. But I think they're still, all four of them are better than anything that came before in the Bond world.
I love Live and Let Die, so I won't let you
Me
say
too,
it. I love
yeah.
that film. There's something guilty about it, but I do like the fact that they set the tone. Okay, it is a Bourne homage, isn't it? It really is, like you've just said. But I loved it, and to see Mads Mikkelsen get the limelight was unbelievable.
And that's the thing, Le Chiffre, Mads Mikkelsen, went straight into the pantheon of the all-time great Bond villains. For me, he is the best Bond villain as Le Chiffre. And also for me, it has the best Bond theme. You Know My Name by Chris Cornell is so good.
It's a great film. I want to rewatch it now.
Yeah.
Not as a podcast, because I don't care enough to talk about it that long. But it is a great, great film. I need to revisit it.
It's a corker.
Excellent choice.
Oh, is it my go?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel...
Don't see, pick mine. I want to talk on this podcast today.
You see, we're going to go from one extreme to the next. So Ben has just completely sold it for me that Daniel Craig makes a mighty fine Bond. So I'm also going to go the antithesis of Bond. So I've gone for Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
I've got it.
Oh, no! Should I just try and pick something else out of the thin air? Jeez, how could you leave this off?
I don't know. That it's just, it is brilliant. It's, of course, stars Mike Myers and Elizabeth Hurley, and it's directed by Jay Roach of Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers, but less said about that, the better. It is completely the anti-Bond. You know, it's a British secret agent who is cryogenically frozen in the 1960s, the same time as his arch nemesis. And they're thawed out, of course, in 1997, the pivotal year when everything went down. You know, I'm referring to, of course, when Hansen was number one with Mbop.
Mbop. It's
an important seminal.
Do you like that? Do you like that?
It was seminal.
I'll tell you what did go down that year. The Spice Girls. Definitely, they would have gone down a few times.
The charts, that's right,
yes,
Mark.
It
yes.
It is.
Definitely.
Quickly say
which
that.
I hate.
But of course, it was a film that was responsible for buzzwords such as Yeah Baby, Shagadelic, and Do I Make You Horny? But it's just a great piss take on all of the spy movies. You know, you look at some of Dr. Evil's cronies, like Number Two. Mm-hmm. Or you look at Mustafa. Or was it Mustafa? Mufasta?
That's Will Ferrell's character.
Yeah. I'm in very bad pain. I've been very badly burnt.
The impressions today are pretty good,
thank
actually.
You.
I'll give you that. Last
always,
episode
always.
Was terrible.
Yeah.
This is good. I'm loving it.
Nothing is on patch with the best villain name in the world, which is A Lot of Vagina. But it's great because it's just one big little nod to all of the Bond films that have gone previously. You know, what happens when a henchman dies of a multi-conglomerate evil corporation, and we get a little flashback to the family and the child going, oh my God, daddy's dead because he got flattened. It's a glorious little piss take. You know, Blofeld with the tribute of Dr. Evil works so, so well. It's hilarious, and it's just a nice little relief for big spy movie fans.
Do you want to know an interesting fact? I bet you never knew about this film.
I love interesting facts.
It was the last film that Michael Myers made that was actually any good.
So if you actually stop and think about it, apart from the Love Guru, but you know.
Hold on, the second Austin Powers film is pretty good. Yes. The third one is fucking terrible.
It's so bad. Yeah. Baby. Ba baby ba lips.
I want ba baby ba baby ba baby ba.
The third one is the Dutch guy, isn't it?
Yeah, gold member.
He's a twat.
That ruined it for me.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't think he ever really gives a shit after making that film. Okay, the second one's okay, but after that, as a character, he's never really did anything since. Because we had Wayne's World from him, we had that, and they're such original characters. It's really, really good fun. And I remember going to the cinema when was it 1997?
97, I know.
20 years ago. Jesus, that is frightening.
Yeah.
But it was huge, and everyone I knew went to see it at school. Everyone was loving it. Everyone was on the playground quoting it, and you had people turning up and trying to touch you dressed as him. Yeah. You know, it's all very weird, but amazing. Such an iconic character. And I do like Mini-Me in the sequel. Didn't you love that character?
Ben Troyer. Yeah.
Very much so. Brilliant.
I actually quite enjoyed Elizabeth Hurley in this. She's actually all right in it.
Oh, she is good fun.
I didn't mind it. You knew
Shagadelic,
she was having...
baby. My impressions are terrible.
I was at a family event the other day, and my cousin was there, and he's a DJ, and apparently he did a DJ set with Vern Troyer not so long ago.
As you do.
And he also did it with Hodor from Game of Thrones. So.
Is that the one you were telling me that had to be cut short?
Whoa! Come on, dude. I need to make... I've got nothing else to talk about, so if I can give me some jokes or puns.
You've not lost it, Mark. I don't care what they say.
I want to mention... What film can I mention? I want to say something. Fuck it. Ben, it's back to you.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So has everyone spent? Have you all gone now?
We're done.
I want to say something, but it might be one you're going to say.
So my final one is a kind of a dark comedy from 2002. It's Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Never seen it.
I've never seen this either.
Oh, wow. You are in for a treat. So the film is based on the autobiography of a guy called Chuck Barris. And this is a real guy who in the 1970s was an American game show host and producer. And he was famous for creating or starring in shows such as The Gong Show, The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game, etc. In the 80s, he then put out an autobiography about his career in TV. But in that book, he also claimed that whilst he was this smiling, happy face on TV, he was also an international assassin for the CIA. So the film was made based on his autobiography, starring Sam Rockwell as Chuck Barris and directed by George Clooney. It was actually Clooney's directorial debut. And it's a brilliant film. It's set in the 60s and 70s, and it has a very hip, retro vibe to it. Gemma, also, I forgot to say, it's written by Charlie Kaufman.
I'm sold already.
That's your night sorted.
Yeah, exactly. Done. And because Clooney is very good friends with Steven Soderbergh, who was one of the executive producers, you could tell he'd taken a lot of advice from him on how to make his first film. It feels like a Soderbergh film. If you like his kind of heist films, you will like this film. And Sam Rockwell, for me, it's a similar thing to Eric Bana. He's one of those guys that just should be a major star. He's not really a leading man type. Sam Rockwell is a better kind of second fiddle, but he should be in more things because he's so good. He has this off-kilter style that's entirely unique. No one else delivers a line quite like Sam Rockwell, and he's so, so good in this. Clooney's brilliant in it. He's actually in it as well. He plays his ice-cool CIA handler who looks after all his missions. It's such a well-put-together film. The interesting thing, though, is that the CIA had to formally say that, no, Chuck Barris was never a CIA assassin.
Really?
He was just a TV presenter. But they would say that, though, wouldn't they?
Well, anything to hide the goods.
Yeah, they'd have to deny it. But if you think about this, it would be like Michael Barrymore coming out and saying that he was an MI6 agent.
Believable.
Yeah, I mean, a guy did die in his swimming pool, but I don't think that was a hit.
It was a hot spot, but yeah.
That was a good show.
That's such an old reference.
That was a good show. If anyone has what, and it, do you know what the annoying thing is? It used to be called Strike It Lucky, and then it called Strike It Rich. Why change it?
I know.
No. Nope.
So you were talking about the film we haven't seen.
No, I'm done. I can't continue.
I don't know. Should we go to social media to bail us out?
Yes, please. For the love of God.
So we're going to go to Facebook first. So Beth Johnston got The Third Man.
Yeah.
Very good. Black Book. And The Fourth Protocol.
Not seen those two.
Oh, The Third Man's a classic. Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Mm.
Keith Manning said True Lies, Bridge of Spies, and Live and Let Die.
Good choices.
Yeah. Am I right in thinking Live and Let Die? Is this the one when James Bond goes over the crocodiles, like steps?
I wouldn't know enough. I've watched a few Bonds, but I don't know. Probably,
they just merged into one.
Yeah.
And John Wimmer said Argo. Now, I'm amazed. Great film. I'm amazed.
Shit.
Nobody put
I'm going to say Argo, so we can talk about that for a bit. So I've got a bit of input to the episode. Amazing film. Affleck's best directing ever.
Yeah, oh, it's a cracker. He also said The Manchurian Candidate and didn't say whether or not it was the original or remake.
It has to be the original. The remake is shite.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Munich.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Then we're going to go to Twitter. So Torrent Terrier at Fatair One said The Ipcress File, Fourth Protocol, and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Yeah. Stuart Randall at Stembot 82 said again Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Bourne Identity, and Casino Royale.
Brilliant choices.
Mm-hmm. Richard Luck at RMG Luck 2017 said The Spy Who Came In From the Cold.
Yeah, great film.
Sounds like, is that from like the 60s or something?
Yeah, it's a very old film.
That's good. The Falcon and the Snowman and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Bloody hell, it's really popular.
Bloody massively possible.
Yeah. Patrick Skaz... Oh no, sorry. Doing a mark. Patrick, I do apologise. I'm going to give it a go. Saxon.
Saxon?
What?
Saxon.
No. There's a few too many consonants. But
do you want Ben to read the name?
No, I'm going to go for it. Patrick Saxon said he's got a lot of similars on here, but he's saying, If Looks Could Kill with Richard Grieco... Johnny English and Top Secret with an exclamation mark on the end.
Johnny English is one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, is that Rowan Atkinson?
Mr. Bean with a gun.
Fuck that.
And a few years ago, there was like another series in the film.
But please keep you.
Yeah, keep them coming, guys. Yeah. And then finally, we've got Jim Boyd at JimBoyd79 said Goldfinger, No Way Out, and The Hunt for Red October.
That's amazing.
All good.
Cracking choices, guys.
Well, it's now time for me to have a bit more input on this episode. I'm not going to keep saying this, but I feel really shortchanged so far. It's the next topic, and it's time for me to announce it. So I've been thinking that, basically, I don't know if it's you guys, but there's nothing better than sitting down and watching kids.
Hang on. I hope
kids films. Kids, sorry, I took a sip of my drink. That was awful. That shouldn't be said like that.
I'm so glad there wasn't a full stop.
Kids films. There's nothing better, but I don't want to come back with animations. I get sick of us always talking about our favourite animations and Disney. I want us to talk about our live-action kids' films, because there's so many out there that, let's be honest about it, on a Sunday afternoon, we're all a bit guilty of putting on Channel 5 and watching something classic. Ben, I know you've done it too. Admit it, we all like a good kids' film. So on the next episode, it's going to be our top three kids' films. We've been to our local View Cinema to see the new film Blade Runner 2049. Now, if you were never born on this planet and you have no basic understanding of film, you wouldn't have realised that this is the follow-up to the 1982 absolute sci-fi masterpiece, Blade Runner. And no, it is a masterpiece, so if anyone's sitting there going, you can't say that, it is. It's one of the greatest films of all time. But now we're focusing on the sequel. This time round, the film focuses on the character Officer K, who's played by the incredible Ryan Gosling. He's a new Blade Runner for the LAPD. After unearthing a long-buried secret that has the potential to plunge what's left of society into chaos, his discovery leads him on a quest to find Rick Deckard, played by Harrison Ford, a former Blade Runner who's been missing for 30 years. Now, if you've never listened to the Skip the End podcast before and you've just seen us advertising this review, we are going to spoil it, because on these reviews we like to talk about the plot, the storyline, and lots of key moments of the film. We encourage you to go and check the film out at your local cinema and then come back, and we even spend time putting the times on our episode, so if you're going to moan about us spoiling it, well, we've warned you. So this is the time to turn off and come back. But if you've seen the film and you're really eagerly waiting for Ben's response on this film, because let's be honest about it right now, mine and Gemma's opinion does not matter right now for this film.
No, it's
this
dead.
Is the moment for Ben to speak about the sequel of his favourite film of all time. So, Gemma.
No. harsh.
So, Ben.
Yeah.
I kind of want a drum roll, but we're not going to do one. Talk to me.
So my overwhelming emotion when coming out of the cinema on Thursday, having seen this film, was one of relief. I was just relieved it didn't piss all over the memory of the greatest film that was ever made. However, after one viewing, I couldn't quite decide where I fell on it. I knew I liked it. I knew I enjoyed it, but I didn't know how much I liked it. I didn't know whether I loved it. It's such a thick, dense, long movie with so much to consider that after one viewing, I just couldn't make my mind up. So I went again. I've actually seen it twice in the 4 days since it's been released. And I can now say, after two viewings, it is a fantastic movie. It is a more than worthy sequel to the greatest film ever made. And arguably, I would say, one of the greatest sequels in history. I loved it.
Gemma.
I want to cry tears of joy. I want to cry tears of appreciation. And I want to cry tears of applause. This is without a shadow of a
tears
doubt.
Tears of applause?
Yeah. Like, if you imagine, like...
Okay, I'll give you that.
This is stunning. This is so detailed. And it is a fully realised and well thought out worthy sequel. Ryan Gosling has just elevated his star power higher than ever before. Villeneuve is a visionary. We're still going to be talking about the 20, 30, 40 years times. And by God, book Roger Deakins the Oscar for Best Cinematography, because this is just astounding. It's a very special moment in cinema right now. To echo Ben, I loved it.
Imagine that, to echo Ben. It was all right. And you've only seen it once.
I've only seen it once.
So I've just come out of the cinema. This is, you know, some inside info here. I didn't get to go with these guys because I was away last week and it was gutting. So I've tried to avoid all social media. But I have, and it's been impossible to avoid. Everyone in the world has given it 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, best film of the year. At this moment in time, from just coming out, and I've got to be careful I don't go over the board, it's an absolute masterpiece. I've never in my life seen something so visually incredible on the big screen in my life. Because I wasn't there in the day that Kubrick brought out his films in the 70s, so I wasn't there to witness them.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like this in the cinema. I didn't check my phone once, Ben, you probably noticed, for 3 hours, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And for me, it is by far the best film this year, and probably the best film in 5 years.
Wow.
It's overtaken Dunkirk, it's overtaken La La Land. It's just... It is an absolute masterpiece. It is. It's a film we'll be talking about in 10 years' time. We will.
And I really relish seeing what your thoughts are after seeing it again, because I think you'll just love it even more. After the second time round, after watching it, because I went with you today, I went to see it with Gemma last week or earlier in the week, seeing it the second time round just hit home everything that's great about it. And honestly, Mark, we saw it today in 2D. If you go again, go and see it in 3D, because it really adds to it. It's not one of that kind of those foolish 3D films where shit flies out the screen at you, that gimmicky stuff. It just adds a layer of depth to it. And Gemma, you mentioned Roger Deakins' cinematography. Some of the composition of the shots and the lighting and so on is so gorgeous, and the 3D really just sucks you into it. So please try and check it out in 3D, Mark. You'll love it even more.
I'll try and find an IMAX with 3D so I can do it in its
glory.
Yeah. It's a bit difficult to even know where to start with this one. Like we said, it's nearly 3 hours. There's so many elements. But let's just talk about the direction, because I think we need to just get on. Yeah. This guy, Denis Villeneuve, has had a really good run of form so far. I wasn't a huge fan of Arrival, but I can't fault the actual direction of the film. It is flawless. And to actually even accept the job of following up the 1982 classic with this, it is impossible. I wouldn't even touch it. I'd be like, no, I'm not going there. But then I think... Without going into it too much, and you guys will add a lot more detail here, but I just think there's no one in the world that could have done a job as well as this. There's no one. At no point did I think, oh, that looks a bit shit, or that's a bit ropey, or this doesn't feel right. It felt like I just unpaused Blade Runner, and it naturally progressed into Blade Runner 2.
Villeneuve is, by all accounts, a huge, huge fan of the original, as everyone in film should be. And he was quite reticent to take this job. I think he turned it down initially, and they had to work on him to accept it, because he didn't want to do it if it wasn't going to be perfect, if it wasn't going to be right. And as you say, Mark, I can't imagine anyone else who would have done a better job than him. His CV at the minute is fantastic, and he's done such a good job. But I think you can't just give the credit to him, because it's such a visual feast. It's a tandem work between him and the cinematographer Deakins, because, you know, the director can tell you what shots they want. It's up to the lead cameraman, your cinematographer, to make them work, to pull it off. So the two of them have pulled off something that is mind-blowing. There are things there that you watch it and you think, wow, that kind of reminds me of the old Blade Runner, but better, bigger, bolder. It's an amazing work, really. And Gemma, you said that Deakins should get his Oscar, and he should. I think he's been nominated something like 11, 12, 13 times and never won. He will be nominated and should win for this finally, because it's breathtaking.
It's quite a lot to try and get your head around, isn't it? Because I know you've had a few days to think about it. You watched it again, and I probably will just relax next time and be like, okay, I'm at ease now, because I know it's going to be a great film, because I've just seen it. But
like, I don't want to make this comparison, but recently we went to see Ghost in the Shell, which is this futuristic world where we see big buildings and we see these big illuminated boards and these advertisement boards and the same colours and the bright sort of weird nostalgia, but in the future, don't we? We see that 80s elements, but we see it in 2049. Why did they get it so wrong and cheesy and cheap-looking when the film that came out the same year did it flawlessly? And I know we give credit to the cinematography, but there's so much distance between the two. It's mind-blowing.
It's because, and this is my personal opinion, I could be very, very wrong, Villeneuve clearly had heart and passion for the Blade Runner movie.
Yeah.
The director, who I can't even remember who did Ghost in the Shell, because why should I, did it for the money. There are two very different things. This is a passion project, and you can see every ounce of love seeping through the screen. Ghost in the Shell, I was left, we were left cold and just distant from it, and it was very, very disappointing. But this is the complete opposite. The way how the fog settles in into the cityscape, and you see these bright neon colours, and they're almost muted from the smog around it.
Yeah.
It left me breathless, even with the actual sort of adverts coming to life. And when we see Joy, when she's got the blue wig and she's naked and she's reaching out to Ryan Gosling at Kay, I could have watched that scene forever and ever.
It's flawless, isn't it?
It really does leave me speechless. Like,
and it's not just the images in the city, because unlike the first Blade Runner, which takes place entirely at night in Los Angeles in this dystopian city, this one goes out of the city. So there are parts where they're in like an irradiated Las Vegas desert.
Yeah.
And Kay is just walking through this, the orange of the sand, and then the kind of orange of the irradiated dust that's hanging in the air. And that is just beautiful. It's like some Lawrence of Arabia shit, man. It's so beautifully done.
The location scouts for these films need a biggest bonus ever, because you're not going to get those people on, like, nominated for Oscars, location scouts.
No.
And they need the credit, because like you said, this orange, when there's, it reminded me a bit of Star Wars, but you see this open big space, which is just this really tinted orange, which I can see on the poster now in front of, in Ben's house here, with the orange around the scape. That is such a unique orange. It sounds weird, but straight away you associate it with Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I might sound insane right
I
now,
know what you mean,
but it's a Blade Runner orange that you just associate with that city and that landscape. And when you see that big building and there's just him in this coat and a black figure just kind of walking off, there's not even any hills or anything. It's just this light.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, print that out. I want it as a poster right now in my room.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. We've talked about how great the film looks, and it undoubtedly does. Let's talk about some of the acting now. Let's start with the lead role. So Ryan Gosling, what do we think to him as Kay?
I want to kiss him, and I find him the most attractive man alive, and I'm not homosexual.
Do we have to do this again? every time we review
can
a Gosling
film. Can I get it off my chest?
Go on,
and
go
onto
on.
His.
Go on,
but
go
no,
on.
I genuinely think the guy is one of the hottest actors right now. Not just hot for looks, but he is. Like, you've got to be careful not to kind of, like, Channing Tatum is a good actor, but he's kind of always known as Magic Mike. He does these films that kind of stick with him. He's broke away from being the pretty boy in some sort of love stories. Ryan Gosling was stuck in it a little bit. He was still, when he did La La Land again, it was a reminder of, oh, you know, come on, dude, you've got better, you're good in this film, you're great, I love your dancing, but I want to see that grittiness, I want to see you be in a sci-fi film. He's done it, and there was not one moment of the film I didn't take. It was like he was in Drive. He's got this serious look, this what he does more than anyone else. It's not even acting at times. He's just being what's needed on the scene.
He has this great way of internalising his emotions, but you can read it. You can read that these emotions are raging inside him. He's great at doing that. So things like Drive, as you mentioned, even Only God Forgives, that's a god-awful film, but he's brilliant at doing that in that film. And this performance reminded me of Only God Forgives more than any of his others. But it works so well for this role because he was playing a replicant. He was playing someone who isn't supposed to be, you know, emotionally over the top. He is supposed to be reserved and you know, confined within his own body. So it was just, he was absolutely the right man for the role.
There's a key scene that you've just mentioned about, you know, this internalization of emotions. It's when he first meets Dr. Anna Stelein and he believes that he could possibly be, spoiler alert, Rachel's child. Rachel and Deckard's child.
Mm.
But then when he's confronted with the memories that she's showing him, and I think the camera probably pans on it, it just stays on his face for probably about 20 seconds, and you just see this slight flicker of emotion in his eyes.
Yeah.
And then you see his face slightly contort. Eventually it builds up to a crescendo where he just loses it. He's just screaming. But I don't know anyone right now who can pull off the moves that he pulled off in that particular scene. And and I'm going to repeat myself, he's elevated his star status. This is a guy who is moved up the big leagues now. He can command any budget he wants now because he's got the acting chops.
You know what the maddest thing is? He does it effortlessly. He doesn't look like he's putting any effort in at all.
He's a born star.
And the thing that I was really pleased about, most pleased about, we've been joking in the run-up to this film that Harrison Ford looked like he might just be phoning it in, but he really wasn't.
No.
Harrison Ford was the match for Gosling in this. There are a couple of scenes. There's a scene towards the back end of the film where the main villain of the piece, Neander Wallace, played by Jared Leto, he comes in and he gives Deckard a new version of Rachel. He gives him a new replicant. And the look on his face, all the emotions washing over him, should he be happy that he's seeing Rachel again? Should he be disgusted that this isn't his Rachel, this is just another replicant with the same face? All of that washes over him. It's some of the best, most committed acting I've seen from Ford in years. I loved him in the last Star Wars film. He was great fun, but he wasn't asked to do a lot other than run around, shoot a gun and then die. Spoiler alert.
Whereas in, what? I haven't seen it!
Sorry about that. Whereas in this, he was asked to do some dramatic heavy lifting, and you're supposed to see the weight of the 30 years since we last saw Deckard. You know, 30 years have gone by. He's been living alone in the desert. And you feel all of that. You feel that weight on him. Just, it's not in many scenes. He doesn't appear till like 40 minutes from the end, I think. Mm-hmm. He's not in that many scenes, but he sells it all beautifully.
Even when he's having an actual fist fight at his age with Gosling, it looked real. I've actually seen a clip recently where he actually punches him and actually connected. But that was unbelievable. And he's done that. He's not got a stuntman in to do those things. He's learned, he's put effort in. And Ben, you were too kind. He didn't give a shit in Star Wars. He did not give a toss. He went there for the paycheck. And that's no disrespect to him. Good on him. But he did not give a rat's ass. In this film, I loved it. And I was worried. I thought he was going to come out in his Gap t-shirt, look at the camera a few times and walk off with his dog and that would be it. But I loved it. Even his drowning stuff I believed in. And the scene when he's in that boat at the end.
It's like a little transport vehicle.
I was literally like gasping for breath myself because he put effort in. And he won't now because he's going to go and do bloody next indie film and he'll just not bother. Yeah.
Can I ask Ben?
Yeah.
Because obviously you are such a big fan of the first Blade Runner film. Obviously seeing Deckard, you know, years and years later. Did it felt like Harrison Ford had comfortably slipped back into the shoes of Deckard? Or did it feel like it was a bit of an effort trying to connect with the character?
Do you know, it's weird you should say that because when I saw it with you on Thursday... Afterwards, I loved the film and I loved the performance, but I thought it was a great Harrison Ford performance, but it wasn't necessarily him playing Rick Deckard. You know, I was kind of like, was it just Harrison being Harrison? I then watched the first Blade Runner again on Saturday, and there were little hints, there were little kind of little twinkles in his eye or his little mannerisms that I thought, no, he is playing that character again. He has brought that character back to life.
I'm glad about that, actually.
And he wasn't in it that much, like you said. No, literally. Barely. And the poster's got him on, and again, a bit of a false advertisement, but I blinked twice in the film and nearly missed all of Jared Leto. I was very surprised how little he was used.
Which was a shame, because he was magnificent. And I don't say that lightly, because I hate the man generally. Not for his acting, but for the fact that he's a 40-year-old man playing music for 20-year-olds, or 15-year-olds. 15. Even, 15, he disturbs me. But in terms of an actor, he's very good. And I thought his delivery as Wallace, the way he just delivered lines, it was so off-kilter. He sounded to me kind of like a less robotic version of Stephen Hawking. It's the way he had this kind of stilted delivery, and it worked. It was so cool, and I loved him. And it is a shame that we only saw him in, I think, two or three scenes, because he was so good. But I kind of worry that they're setting up a sequel, another sequel. They're going to see how this one does at the box office, and by the sounds of it, it's not doing that well in America now.
I heard this too.
But I think the fact that you've got him, the main villain, is still out there and has yet to have his comeuppance, and then you've got this upcoming replicant uprising that we don't know where that goes. I think they clearly have their eyes on a future film, which I don't think they should do. I think you've hit the ball out of the park twice now. Stop.
You're not going to do it on the third.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't risk it. But I think that's what they're setting up. That's why I think we didn't see as much of him as perhaps we should have.
When you look at the poster, though, he's one of the main things. In the trailer, he's the main thing, which is quite nice to be surprised again. In cinema, you don't... I thought we were going to get Harrison Ford from the first scene of the whole film.
Yeah.
So it's quite refreshing to be surprised.
One scene that really blew my mind was the sex scene between Kay and Joy.
Yeah.
So, of course, Joy is a... she's almost like sort of this...
She's a hologram.
Hologram, yeah. And she's clearly in love with Kay. So what she does is she gets in touch with a prostitute called Mariette, who's played by Mackenzie Davis, a.k.a. Yorkie from San Junipero.
That's where I've seen her before.
And she's also in Halt and Catch Fire, which is a TV show I adore.
Ah. And so she uses Mariette's body to have sex with Kay. Now, that whole sequence, again, this is the whole thing of, I've never seen anything like this before. It was such a one-off. It was such an original scene that you watch it back now, you're like, actually, that I don't know why nothing had been like that before. But you get glimpses of Mariette's face, and then it magically morphs straight into Joy's. And I just thought that whole scene, and when you see both sets of hands sort of cradling Kay's head, like, it was a beautiful sex scene.
Yeah.
Really, really hypnotic.
I've not seen anything like that. The closest I think is Ex Machina. That's when you get that kind of feeling of that. But the hands that were going in, and there's four hands going in and
gorgeous.
Out.
Gorgeous.
The way it was done, it was seamless. And the CGI is absolutely flawless. There wasn't one bit where you thought, oh, that looked a little bit ropey, which they could do. And I'd be fine with that. But that was the scene I wrote notes for. I was like, that was unbelievable.
Yeah. It was so good. And just speaking of that relationship between Joy and Kay, there's something really sad and really heartbreaking about a love story between a hologram and a replicant. Mm-hmm. But it kind of plays into the themes of the Blade Runner universe of both films, that what is it to be human? Does being born and supposedly having a soul, does that make you a human? Or does having that kind of emotional reaction and connection to another being make you as good as a human? You know, that's the whole point of the theme of this film and the prior one. And I thought that relationship was beautifully played, especially from Gosling. But Ana de Armas was really good as Joy.
She was brilliant.
Well. My favourite character in the film, though, who we've not mentioned yet, was Love. Played by Sylvia Hoeks. She was kind of Wallace's right-hand woman. She was his replicant enforcer, and she had kind of a Terminator vibe about her. All the main kind of fight scenes involve her. A brilliant scene, Mark mentioned it earlier, when the transport ship crashes into the sea, and then she's fighting with Kay, and he's trying to save Deckard. She's such a badass in that scene. There's also the scene when she kills the Lieutenant Joshi. She crushes the glass in her hand and then stabs her. She's just so cold and such a badass. She was my favourite thing in it by a mile.
And what I liked about her is she seemed a genuine threat. Mm. Like, in the rest of the film, I wasn't really ever feeling that he was actually ever going to get defeated. But in this film, I thought, she might kill off Harrison right now. I got a feeling this could happen, and that would be tragic, I think. I don't want to see him go in another a big film right now. It's too soon after episode 7. But I generally thought, okay, she's going to have her moment here. But yeah, amazing. I've not seen her much before.
I've never seen her in anything. No. I'd never heard of her.
No. Well, she's going to go on to big things.
I hope so.
Ruthless, formidable, but more importantly, memorable.
Yeah.
And perfect.
We've seen how many times we watch films where we've complained about the villain.
Yeah.
I think that's probably outweighed more films this year than any others. But my God, she's up there with Michael Keaton, you know, who was great in Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2? Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
But she was great. You know, it's just that soulless face that she had. It was just this, it was just painted on.
She's the moment when she killed Lieutenant Joshi, and she was crying as she did it.
Yes.
She was so determined, but there were tears coming out of her eyes as well. It was so powerful. And she's got a brilliant face. She's got quite a little bum chin, like kind of a squared off jaw. She just has a really, like, a handsome face that's made to be on the screen.
Like angular.
Yeah.
An angular face.
Yeah.
I was convinced when she was drowning as well, with those fucking Gosling's hands around her throat. And it went on too long that I was like, I can feel myself drowning watching this. I don't like it.
But I like that, though. I like
you fact like drowning?
That, well, favourite pastime in the world. Yes. Of course I do. But I like the fact that we mentioned this not long ago, actually, about deaths aren't supposed to be quick, like in Munich.
Yeah.
Deaths are long, deaths are horrible. And in this instance, it was not a very nice thing to watch, but it needed to be there.
Yeah.
You needed to see just how determined Kay was to kill off the woman who killed his love life.
Yeah.
You know, with that axe kick.
Amazing.
Ruthless bitch.
She was so cool. I'll tell you something that I was really glad about. So the plot revolves around the fact that Rachel, from the first film, she had a kid and she was the first ever replicant to give birth. And the police wanted to cover this up because they didn't want the world to know, because then there'd be riots, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So Kay is out there trying to find this kid. And then it comes to the fore that it seems like Kay might have been the kid. And when that was kind of revealed that Kay was the kid all along, I was like, oh no, that really disappointed me. I was like, it makes the world too small. Not everyone has to be that closely interlinked. I'm just going off on a tangent.
It's just
made me think about that, the bit when he does that kind of the modern version of the Voight Kampff test and he has to say interlinked.
Interlinked.
I love that. But anyway, so not everyone has to be that closely interlinked. So I was disappointed when he was going to be the kid. So when it turned out, the little swerve at the end, he wasn't the kid. The kid was the girl, the dream maker. Mm-hmm. That I was like, oh, thank God. Because that's a good twist. And it was just relieving to me that it was someone different. I just thought it would have made the world too small.
Yeah,
I couldn't have predicted anything in this film, if I'm honest. It completely shook me. It was nothing like the trailer. The trailer was completely catfished anyone, because there was nothing was given away, was it? Which is good. Most films you see when you go and watch the trailer nowadays. Yeah. Unbelievable. And one thing we haven't touched on, I got to mention it, is the soundtrack and the score, because it felt like exactly like the original, which is 1982. The sound, I don't think, ever stopped throughout the whole film. There was always this kind of note, like low.
It was like, and it was a ghost of Vangelis. Yes. It never directly went into any Vangelis-type score that we see, you know, with the saxophones in the first film. But Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wolfish.
Amazing.
And
it wasn't too overpowering. No, it was needed when it was for the big action points, but it just took me back to Blade Runner.
Yeah, like we've mentioned, there were hints towards the original Vangelis score, but Zimmer did his own thing. Zimmer's scores always have that low rumble, that thing.
I thought it was the speaker again in the
view. Exactly, yeah, you never know, do you? There was one time I found it a bit overpowering, which Zimmer does tend to do. It was the bit where Kay was walking through the desert towards Deckard's place, and it's the bongs, bong that Zimmer loves. And I'm thinking, is that just soundtrack, or is there something happening? Is a ship landing? You know, I didn't know whether that was action-related or just soundtrack. So he does that a bit too much at times, but it's a minor quibble, because I really did love the soundtrack otherwise.
It's when the synth sound goes...
What I love doing now...
Like a dying cat.
Yeah. See, don't need Hans Zimmer, you need me.
You've got it here, all of it today. I do like it when I've seen a film and I come back and then do listen to it, because it just takes you back to those scenes and how well it was used. It's amazing. I'm going to buy that on vinyl. And you know it's going to come with something sexy. You'll end up buying it.
Yeah, probably.
Beautiful.
Oh, what if it comes with, like, a joy? Like, an actual hologram joy?
I want one.
I want a joy. Da, 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 da. Christmas is coming around.
Hello. Yeah.
The other thing I want, as much as I want a joy, is Ryan Gosling's coat from that film.
Yes.
Mark and I were talking about this in the car just now. That coat is badass.
Yeah, I'll take a Ryan Gosling myself. But...
If you see a coat, any of the listeners out there, that's very close to it in Top Man or other sort of main stores, River Island
are available.
Or places, do tweet us, because we do genuinely want one.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll share it.
I don't know about that.
I'll have it half of the week, you have it the rest. Can you get it, swap it weekends.
Dry clean it before you give it to me.
Mark and Ben Gosling.
People are just dreaming about that.
I know.
Anything else to say, guys?
Do you know what? I could talk about it all day, but at some point we've got to move on. So let's move on now. Let's score it.
Let's go first with Gemma to build up to the Big Ben one. So then we'll go to me and then to Ben.
Big Ben. I like that. I'm happy with that.
You like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an extremely high 9 out of 10. I do want to see it again. I think if I do see it again, I think that's going to be bumped up very, very quickly to 10. But my God, what an absolute impression for 2017. Thank you so much, Denis Villeneuve. And thank you, more importantly, thank you for making Ben happy.
Yes, thanks, Denis. Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, is it Denis?
Yeah, he's like French-Canadian or some shit.
Like Denny.
Oh,
hi, Denny. If we meet him, we'll buy him a beer.
Oh, yeah. Round one S, mate.
Okay, so we usually go, no film should get a 10. It never stands the test. Fuck all that bollocks. It's a 10 out of 10. It's perfect. It looked beautiful. It sounded beautiful. Everyone gave us what they promised. It was never meant to be as good as this. Film of the year, 10 out of 10. Ben.
Well, I don't think I can give a film 10 out of 10 until I can see if it stands the test of time.
Fuck all that.
No, it's a 9 for me. It's a very high 9. And if I see it again with a bit more time and distance, I could see it coming up to a 10 eventually. I can't think of a negative thing, but it's just my own internal rule. So it's a 9, a very high 9 for me. So an overall score for Blade Runner 2049, 9 out of 10.
It's competition. I tried.
You're right.
I'm trying to get really long on that, but I think just shorter is better sometimes, isn't it?
Here, have some Smirnoff cider to wash that down.
What? Smirnoff cider? I thought they just deal in vodka.
No.
So what flavours have we got today?
Well, I have passion fruit and lime.
I've got mandarin and pink grapefruit.
I've got raspberry and pomegranate.
I'll be honest, it's actually really nice.
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
Mm. I wouldn't expect such great... Oh, it's beautiful. It's like summer's here, even though it's coming to winter.
I
know. It's amazing.
That's Smirnoff cider.
Tag us in on Twitter if you're listening to the episode, because we need some cider. So, as you heard, it's cider time. It's competition time, which means we've got some good prizes to give away and some winners to announce from the last episode. So if you listen to our Kingsman episode, which was only 2 weeks old, we gave away some awesome prizes, starting with a Kingsman bundle. It had a t-shirt, a hat, some shot glasses, some whiskey glasses. It had loads, a hoodie, a jumper, just absolutely loads to do with the Kingsman. We made it really, really simple, as we always do here. Who directed the film, Gemma?
Matthew Vaughn.
It is, and Louise Denny agrees with you on Facebook, so she's going to get that whole bundle. And again, I want to see her.
Oh, hi, Louise Denny.
Oh, yes, it's the Denny Show, nice.
Our good friend's Last Exit to Nowhere brought out a brand new Pulp Fiction shirt. Beautiful. Remember we saw it on the last episode?
Mm-hmm.
Again, couldn't get any easier. Ben, you might know this. Who directed Pulp Fiction?
I think it's Quentin Tarantino.
It is. And Alistair Wright got that right.
Oh.
See what I did there? Yeah. Yep, so that's good. I want to see you wearing that. Let us know your size and we'll get it out to you in the post. Our good friends at Funko, that's a fun...
Oh, no, we've already got them. We don't need to do that.
Well, I just want to say, by the way, I listened to their podcast this week. It's really bloody good. Those guys do an amazing podcast, and I can see now why some of our friends were absolutely obsessed with Pops.
Yeah.
And Ben's now got that addiction.
Yeah, I bought another three yesterday.
Oh, dear. It's so bad.
Oh, dear.
It's easily done, but they've got some great stuff, and they've given us the set of four Kingsman Pops, and what we said was, who plays Harry in the film?
Colin Firth.
It is, and Oliver Clark gets that. So again, I want to see a picture of those Pops. And we made it really good this time. If you are a loyal fan to us, or you're a new fan and you think we're great, you went on iTunes and you left us a 5-star review. Really simple, and we want to make sure that everyone's catered for. So we put them all in a hat, and what we'll do, we'll pick one out now, and we'll read it out, and they'll win another set of those Funkos, okay? So mm-hmm. The winner is, drum roll, let's do one. Oh. Chili Tom, who has said, I only used to listen to one movie podcast, Empire. I've now stopped listening to them and only listened to you.
Good. Aww.
Good. Well, Empire are very good as well, but, well, you know, why would you have a kebab when you've got sirloin steak at home? That's what I want to say. That's a sirloin. Get a cow sent to us.
The UK meat board will send us some steaks.
Next week there's a cow in the
Throw
house.
Throw it over a bridge on a boat. Like Alan Partridge trapped under a cow.
We need some Partridge on the episode.
We do need Partridge.
It's now time to give away some good prizes again, and this time they're huge, starting with our good friends Universal. Get this, guys, you know, you just mentioned the new Snowman film, which is out on the 13th of October.
Yep. Oh, aye.
They've given us a brand new merch pack, which has got a notebook, a t-shirt, some pens and a book. And we're going to give them a Sonos play system as well.
You're shitting me.
Wireless cinema, sound, music, wireless sound in your home.
Holy. They're quite pricey. What are we talking?
A few hundred quid, yeah. Honestly.
God, I think you're going to be sick.
CS credit about 100. So, yeah, pretty good. Let's make it really simple. And I want to see this film next week if you want to skip trip and not have to review it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Fassbender plays which character in that? Really simple. IMDb.com has all those answers. Also, we've got a Blade Runner shirt from our good friends Dark Bunny. Have you seen this one? It's got a glow-in-the-dark print.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. Mm. Make it really simple. Who directed the Blade Runner sequel, 2049? Easy. You just heard us say it. We're also going to look after our listeners on iTunes. So if you want to leave us a 5-star review, you can go into the prize draw to win the Snowman bundle, which is the t-shirt and the pens and the notebook and the t-shirt. We're going to look out for you that way. Now, Ben, you've saw this week, didn't you, a really cool picture on our social media?
Yes.
It was unbelievable. I can't remember the user's name.
It's the FU Allen.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. He's brilliant. He's done some really good drawings as well.
So it's called, is it Inktober or something, where you do a different picture
Hashtag
each day?
Hashtag Inktober, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this picture was incredible. It's I couldn't believe it when it came up. It just had a picture of a skip in the sea. Gemma's kind of pointing out over to the left,
to
saying,
the
skip to the end.
Yeah.
There's me and Ben also there. And who else is there?
Big Red, Eric Rowan. Our hero.
And underneath we've got Jaws about to attack us. Yeah. This is incredible. And I want to award this guy.
Yeah.
I think he's done fantastic. So I'm going to send him a surprise bundle. But he's probably going to have some t-shirts and stuff. But we're going to look after him. But I think we should also run this as a comp.
Yeah, I like that. I want to see what other artistic talents our listeners have.
So let me say that if someone does it well, we'll give them some Pop vinyls.
Yeah.
Exclusive ones that are coming out right now for something quite big. We're not going to tell you yet, but it's going to be big. We're going to give you some t-shirts, and we'll give him the final Skip to the End keyring.
Is there only one
There's
left?
One left.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Is it like cracked and been at the bottom of your bag
it's
for
completely
months?
Completely trashed. It's brand new.
So we want you to do a drawing of us, of the three members of the Skip to the End podcast team. You can put us in any scenario you would like. Nothing sexual, please. We don't want it.
I do.
Mark does. Gemma and I don't.
No.
If you want to know what we look like, please do go on skiptothend.co.uk and look at the About Us page and you'll see pictures of all of us. If you go on our Twitter or Instagram, you will find pictures of us. If you look at one of Gemma's videos that she does on our Facebook page, you'll see what Gemma looks like.
I'm the one with the tash.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the one with the tits, which would have also been true.
Yes.
Tits and tash.
And yeah, basically we'll look at them all throughout the week, put them on Twitter, put them on Facebook, put them on Instagram, email, do what you want. We'll see them and we'll pick a winner for this in 2 weeks' time, along with the winner for the Sonos, the Blade Runner bundle, the T-shirts, the snowman. Shit, man, we're giving too much away.
Too much.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm having the Sonos.
So come back in 2 weeks' time to find out if you're a winner.
I think we drink virgin blood because it sounds cool.
I think of it like this. If you were going to eat a sandwich, you would just enjoy it more if you knew no one had fucked it.
It's now that time of the show where we talk about movie masturbate. We're going to be talking about our favourite performance from either an actor or an actress that we picked out the pot on the last episode. So we're going to be talking about the one, the only, the very hard to imitate, but we're going to give it a try anyway, Mr. Robert De Niro.
How do you play it down even?
It's well,
just, I don't know.
Our response on the last one's amazing.
That was justified.
That went on for about an hour. I just had to edit it down.
Justified. So this is going to be a very interesting one. It's going to be interesting to see if we have an individual one or if there's going to be any crossover. So Ben, I want to hear your favourite ever, ever, ever Robert De Niro performance. Go.
You're talking to me? You're talking to me? Obviously you are. It's Taxi Driver. Of
Same
course
here.
It is.
Same you got here.
It as well.
Yeah, I got it as well, yeah.
It's a magnificent film. He plays Travis Bickle, who's a depressed, insomniac Vietnam vet who wages his own war against the scum he sees on the streets of New York City. And it's a magnificent performance. And it's always the case when he works with Scorsese. Scorsese always knows how to get the best out of him, but I think this is the best of the best. The really impressive thing about this performance for me is that he plays this character who is disturbed, but he plays him in a very reserved, understated way. A lesser actor, an actor of lesser skill, would have lent into the deranged side of him and would have gone over the top and just made him this, you know, Nicolas Cage-style lunatic. Oh, I'm just thinking how great this film would be if Nicolas Cage was in it.
Can we make
the remake?
It's got to happen. It's got to happen. But he plays it in this reserved way. He never makes the easy choice. He makes really difficult and interesting choices as an actor. And that's why he's arguably the greatest of all time. It's a brilliant film. The ending is a complete knockout. You know, the fact that he ends up being painted as a hero when he's very much a villain. He was 2 seconds away from assassinating a presidential candidate, you know.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful film with a magnetic central performance.
He's so impassive. So impassive. Mm. It's like the calm underneath an ocean. You know, you've just got this calm surface and underneath there's just fire and rage and anger. But even the way how whenever he does the voiceovers or if he's reading a letter to his mother and father and it's just this one note, it's so emotionless. There's no feeling or empathy whatsoever. It's even when he describes seeing Betsy for the first time as this angel, that again, there is no real feeling, no urge, no want. And it is done in a way that I think is probably more realistic than, say, when you watch a film like Girl Interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a major stereotype of mental illness.
Yeah.
But I think this is probably one of the most realistic portrayals. I think that the fact that there is no real humanity, I mean, funnily enough, the only real humanity he shows is towards Iris, played wonderfully by Jodie Foster.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only depth of feeling and concern he has for this 12-year-old prostitute who he desperately, because he knows she's a victim of the scum on the streets, so therefore he's got to save her. He's the ultimate anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
He is the ultimate anti-hero.
There's a little touch in the film that I love. So the final scene of the film, he picks up the girl who he briefly dated. And she hated him because, you know, he took her to see a porn film. And then he's taken her and she's now seen that he's in the papers as this hero. And, you know, they kind of settle their differences and he lets her, you know, have the free ride. And you, for a minute, you think, oh, maybe he's fixed. But of course, people with problems aren't fixed, certainly not easily. And then you see him do this kind of little sideways look at something. You think,
yes.
What's he seen? Is he going to snap again? And I think it was Paul Schrader who wrote it, said that he sees the ending of that film as going back to the start of the film. It's a cycle. He's back to the kind of relatively happy person he was at the start of the film, but it's just going to go south again. It's going to go tits up again.
It's fascinating,
on and
isn't
on
it?
And on until he does something truly, you know, something he can never come back from.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But what a treat watching this film again.
Yeah.
I didn't agree.
No.
Oh, I'm
boo,
sorry.
Boo.
I've gone for the portrayal of Jack LaMotta in Raging Bull from 1980.
Never heard of Jack LaMotta.
How do you pronounce it?
Jake.
Jack.
Idiot.
Oh my God.
I love that. I'm keeping that in.
Sweet Jesus.
An absolute masterpiece from the 80s. You have to admit, this is an incredible film. I can't believe I said Jack.
It's a great film.
Big build-up, his favourite role. Absolutely love it. Can't even get his name right. What a film, be honest. The emotional, self-destructive life of this boxer is insane. He becomes the king of the ring. He really is the best of all... Not wrestling terms here.
Jerry Lawler.
Should he be Owen Hart?
Massively. In the top of the world in boxing, but we also see how it destroys his life outside of it. And for me, you know, it's fully deserved the best Oscar, which was great to see. Scorsese again. You got the guy that wrote the same script from Taxi Driver, so you know he's on a winner here. Mm-hmm. De Niro actually read the whole memoirs of this Jake character. And as soon as he read it, he wanted to do it. That was it. He gained 60 pounds for this role, which is... And back then it was unheard of. You see, you know, Christian Bale do it every week now and Tom Hardy, but this was unheard of in this world. And one of the best scenes for me is when he accuses his brother of having the affair, and you're seeing, you know, on his own wife, and you're seeing how raw and intense, and you're sitting on the edge of your seat just knowing that tension is building. And for me, I've never seen De Niro give such a strong performance. Don't get me wrong, everything we've ever heard of, apart from Rocky and Bullwinkle, has been incredible. He gives everything to performance. He never just goes with it and meet the parents maybe, but this stuff we're talking about in the 70s and 80s and early 90s is just incredible. And the black and white scenes, everything about it, the rawness, and that's all Scorsese, but not one moment do I ever doubt that he's not a boxer. And that's hard in a film. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal did it well, Sylvester Stallone did it incredibly, but you know, De Niro did it the best. I think it's better than Rocky. I think it's the best boxing film in the world.
Yeah,
and fair play for the portrayal of Jake so well. I can't believe I said Jack. Jake LaMotta.
What about that bit when he starts punching the wall slowly, then hard, and then just like sort of like an imitation of Hulk? But
he's actually hitting it as well. You know,
he's method man.
He doesn't give a shit.
He is method man.
He's not method man. He's not in the Wu-Tang
that
clan.
That would be amazing if Robert De Niro was in Wu-Tang.
He blacked up for that film and does that.
And Al Pacino is Ghostface Killer.
Yes. Oh my God.
We've made two good films here right now about. But yeah, I think it's my favourite performance. I think it's definitely one of his best. And to get an Oscar, you know, amazing.
It's magnificent. Do you know what really upset me? Did you see, I'm sure your answer has to be no. Did you see a film called Grudge Match?
I've heard about it.
I haven't, though.
This is the one with Sylvester Stallone and Robert De Niro.
Yeah, it's the one where they play two aged boxers who come out of retirement to have a match. And it's obviously playing off the legacy of De Niro.
Is this real?
It's real.
Yeah,
it's a real film. And it plays off the legacy of De Niro playing LaMotta and, of course, of Stallone playing
Jack
Rocky.
Jack LaMotta, please.
Jackie boy. Yeah. Oh, good Lord. And it's a shit show. Nobody needed that to happen.
It looks terrible.
How old is this?
Not old.
Is it within the last 10 years?
I am heartbroken.
I want to say 2011.
Something like that.
Shocking.
Yeah.
I don't know why you watched it.
I shouldn't have to. I don't know why I did either.
I want to hear what the social media have said.
As do I. First of all, on Twitter, we have Sharon Mapleton at S4SS7. She said Cape Fear.
Oh, that's a great film.
Oh,
masterpiece.
He's terrifying as Max Cady. Yeah. So good. Robert at That Robster has said The Intern. You are having a laugh, Robert.
It's Anne Hathaway.
Good
it's
Lord.
Not great.
No, he's out of his mind. Nick Foot at Nick73Foot. For me, it's got to be Deer Hunter. Such a great but also restrained performance. It's written all over his face. So true.
You should come on the podcast with stuff like that.
That's good analysis. And it plays into what we were saying with Taxi Driver, that, you know, that restrained side of it. Yeah. Rock of Gibraltar at TheShining76 has said Midnight Run.
Never My seen God. That.
Dude.
I know.
It's such a great film. It's a buddy comedy with Charles Grodin. It's hilarious.
One of our most popular ones on social media as well.
Wowzers.
It's very good. On Facebook, we have Andy Strangebrew O'Neill, who has said, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, dear.
It was that or Raging Bull for me. It was so close.
Andy, I'm gonna assume that was a gag.
If not, we'll block him.
Yeah, big time. Back to Twitter. John Wimmer at The Whim. Raging Bull.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Pop Vultures podcast at The Pop Vultures have said Heat.
Oh my God,
great
yes.
Masterpiece.
And De Niro. B. Garner at B. Garner has said Once Upon a Time in America without a doubt.
I keep forgetting how many great films he's got.
And that is amazing. It's insanely long, but a great film.
If you've got a day off work, watch that.
Tom Round on Facebook has said, tough one, so many to choose from, but I think it has to be Awakenings. Heartbreaking and often overlooked.
You know,
I've never seen it. It's the one with Robin Williams, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, halfway through the film, in the first half of the film, Robert De Niro is completely, like, cold. He just doesn't move. He just blinks his eyes.
But he's like catatonic, isn't he?
Yeah. And then he takes a drug and it makes him talk like you and me. But it is, like, it's a gut punch of an ending, though. It's really sad.
When you say he talks like you and me, he keeps, like, missaying words and doing lots of
exactly.
De Niro-isms.
I know. We try our best, don't we, Mark?
Brilliant. Calling people by completely the wrong name. Lorraine Andrew at Loz2442AN. Gonna go all out and ignore his gritty films and say, Meet the Fockers.
At least go with Meet the Parents.
Yeah, Meet the Parents is all right. Meet the Fockers is terrible.
Was he in the third one as well?
He was.
The Little Probably. Fockers.
He was in all of them.
I'm not going to be degrading. I just want to pick out the hat, the next winner.
Is it Pooch's turn?
Winner?
Winner. Right. The winner.
So, Mark, should we give Gemma a drum roll while she picks one out of the box?
Please.
You're not
going
to top De Niro.
On the next Movie Masturbate, we will be masturbating over Seth Rogen.
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 Fucking hell.
Oh my God. You fucking idiot.
I don't know why I work with you, Anarchist. I really don't.
Seth Rogen. We're going to be masturbating over Seth Rogen.
Sweet.
Let us do the procession of shame now.
Our rewatch this time is What We Do in the Shadows, directed by Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clements. Set in New Zealand, a documentary team who have been granted protection films the lives of a group of vampires for a few months. They reveal their dark and mysterious world to us, the viewer, as they flatshare, go clubbing, and induct their newest companion Nick into their society. All of this is leading up to the annual shindig of the vampire calendar, The Unholy Masquerade. So the film stars Taika Waititi, Jermaine Clements, Johnny Brew, and Corey Gonzalez-Melsa. So, who would like to go? Let's go, Mark. Let's go
first.
Oh,
you're actually going to pick me for something first.
Oh, not this again.
I'll just get so used to it now.
Won't let it go. Sorry, while I draw a violin for you. So, Mark, thoughts, please.
Really bloody enjoyed it. I've only watched it once before when it came out. Went to the cinema and saw it and thought it was bloody funny, very original. Didn't have a long run in the cinema. I think it was like
a week in an independent cinema locally
to us. Bought the Blu-ray and I sat down and thought, right, let's do this. Loved every minute of it. Thought it was very original. Completely forgot how original it was. And it's probably the closest we'll ever get to like Spinal Tap for the modern day sort of viewer.
Ben?
Yeah, I agree completely. And same thing. I saw it in 2014 when it came out. This is the first time I've seen it again. I'm a sucker for comedy mockumentaries. I genuinely love all of them. Many of the Christopher Guest style films like Spinal Tap, as Mark mentioned. And this is right up there with them. It's so silly and so funny. And it co-stars some of my favourite people on earth. Jermaine Clement, I love. Rhys Darby is just a walking god to me. So, of course, I was predestined to love this film, and I do.
It's charming and it's funny and it's surprisingly warm for a film about vampires. So thankfully, we're not seeing any of them start to get glittery under the sunlight. We're not going to start seeing a moody Kristen Stewart being a love interest. This is a good, bloody fun film. Taika Waititi is the utter star of the film. He's well-meaning, he's good-natured and he has natural comedic flair. And there's just a real fantastic chemistry with the whole of the cast. It doesn't feel forced in any way. It's almost like they were meant to do this film. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a fun rewatch to do.
I don't know where to start, really.
I know. Hey, well, tell you what, why don't we start with the man I just mentioned, Taika Waititi. So he is going to be a bit of the flavour of the month, especially for our next episode with the Thor Ragnarok review. He directed it. He starred in it. I think he wrote this too. But He just makes my world go round. I'm just going to throw it out there. The one thing I absolutely love about him in this film is just the random smiles he does towards the camera. Yeah. You know, and I read somewhere that he actually based his performance of Viagra.
Whatever it's that.
Viago.
Seth Rogen.
Jack, Jake.
Cool beans. He based his performance on his mum. So when you look back at it, and it's quite like when he's waking up all the other flatmates going, Vicky, Eggs and Biggie, come on, we've got to talk about the flat. It's his mum we're watching. It's not Tiger.
I don't know if I'd be flattered by that. No. If it was his mum, I'd be a bit disturbed, I think.
Yeah, not a very big compliment, that one. Yeah.
But he's just, there's just something so wonderful and so likeable about the guy.
Yeah, even though his whole raison d'etre is luring people back to his house so he can murder them and drink their blood.
But he does it in such a sweet way, though, doesn't he?
That one where he wants to make sure she's had a nice evening. He wants to make sure she had a good date. And then he tries to suck her blood and he hits the artery.
Shit!
That's the first lol moment I had in that, when he was just literally sitting on the sofa and looking at her neck, and he's pulling her hair nicely back and just looking at the fresh neck. And then he's covered absolutely head to toe in it.
What about him, just with his mouth wide open going, ah, just trying to catch that so sweet, good. Sweet nectar.
One of the things I really like is how each of the vampires who live, you know, in the shared flat have a different kind of vampire style. So you've got, is it Peter who lives in the basement?
Peter.
Who looks like Nosferatu. He's that classic kind of vampire. Jermaine Clement's vampire, he's your Vlad. You know, what you think of when you think of Dracula, he's that guy. And then you've got the guy who becomes a vampire, you know, he's the newcomer, isn't
Nick.
He? Nick. And he does look like the kind of Twilight guy in his little fancy drummer's jacket that he wears. You know, I like how they're all a different genre of vampire all cohabiting.
Oh, I think Jermaine Clement's is cool as balls, though, in this. You know, he's 16, but he had a hard life. But of course, it's just a mock about Vlad the Impaler, because he calls himself Vlad the Poker.
Vlad the Poker.
This is my torture chamber. It's just him.
I love, leave me to my dark bidding. What are you bidding on? I'm bidding on a table.
So easy, but so good.
Apparently, he based his performance on Gary Oldman from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
He did a better job than Oldman, to be honest.
Massively.
I love the line about talking about virgin blood, and he's like, you know, if you were eating a sandwich, surely you'd enjoy it before knowing that someone had fucked it with it. It's incredible. What a great analogy for that. Amazing.
It's so much fun. And what I also like about this film are the special effects.
Mm.
So not just obviously when they're having an argument, they start flying up to the ceiling.
Oh, I love that, yeah.
Also, when Nick and Deacon have a big fisticuffs and we see them almost like Inception.
That's exactly what I thought. It's like the rotating hallway scene in Inception.
Yeah, bloody brilliant.
Also, when he goes to the shop and he's like, show me your vampire stuff. That CGI, when he actually his face changes, I was like, shit, I didn't realise the budget was that good. That was nailed.
Although the best one is when Vlad appears as a cat and it's just his face going meow when they're taunting Nick to suck his blood.
What's the guy that's supposed to be Nosferatu's kind of character?
Peter.
Was it Pete? He genuinely scared me when they first wake him up and he's like, Peter. Peter goes, what? That genuinely scared the shit out of me. It's like the Jaws moment. Like, when's it going to come? That was actually not nice.
Yeah. I think my favourite character in the whole thing is Stu.
Stu's
their little human friend. Oh. And the best part is that Stu, in real life, as he is in the film, is just an IT professional. He's not an actor. He just happens to know some of the guys who are in the film. They brought him in to do a bit part. He actually did the IT on the film behind the scenes as well. They brought him in for a bit part, and he didn't realise how pivotal to the whole film he was until the premiere when they watched it. It was, oh, shit.
He's like the nicest friend you could ever have. Yeah. Even when he finds out Nick's a vampire, he's just like, okay. He's just like, he's like the coolest guy ever.
I didn't know that story about that. Yeah. That's incredible. I need more friends like that. That's awesome.
Hey, I tell you what, mate, I want the swearwolves. Werewolves, not swearwolves. I want to be in their gang. Absolutely fantastic. When they have that sort of big confrontation in the park, and when they're provoking each other, I think Deacon throws a stick and one of them goes for it like a dog.
Yeah, he's like, he didn't even throw anything. What are you doing?
I like it when the full moon's about to come out and Rhys Darby's character, the leader of the werewolves, is having a go at them because they're not all wearing sweatpants. He's like, you're wearing tight jeans. They're going to rip. You know what? Sweatpants, you'll grow into them.
It's just a nice 80-minute film. It's not 2 hours. This is actually, I thought, because obviously with Blade Runner 2049 being so in-depth, and it really sort of stretched our brain muscles for that, this was just something nice, something light. And not only that, it also has a scene about the procession of shame. Maybe we should do this for anybody that gives us like really shit sort of suggestions.
Yeah.
Bad vampire. Shame. Shame.
It's just them walking around in a circle.
Bad vampire. Shame.
I think you're absolutely right about the length, though. It's just shy of 85 minutes, and that's all it could be, because it's a fairly thin premise, and to try and stretch it beyond that would have been unbearable, but it works. It's basically like a sketch.
Yeah.
So, you know, an hour and a half really is the longest it could have been, but it works beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And credit, like you said, we've talked about the CGI, but just the acting on whole, all the special effects they do themselves that look cheap work. It needs to be like that. You don't want to see some glorious Michael Bay sort of explosions. No. Everything just worked. I laughed. 82 minutes flew by.
Yeah,
it did.
Loved it.
And you mentioned, Gemma, when we first started talking about the effects, when you see them fly into the air, the first time we see the vampires fly is when Viago and Deacon are sat at the breakfast table arguing over the fact that Deacon hasn't done the washing up for 5 years. And then they both kind of fly into the air and hiss at each other and then uncomfortably sit back down. It's so well done.
Well, how about when Nick comes into the house as he's like 2 months into being a vampire and he does this awkward sort of backwards kind of ass first
I love
into
that.
The window.
Why don't you just go around the front?
Yeah.
Hanging out.
It's exactly how I'd imagine it. But it does really make me miss the whole premise about Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, man.
It is sorely missed, and especially when you've got two of the three alum, or four alum, including Kirsten Schell. It's nice to see stuff like this again.
It could come back. League of Gentlemen's coming back. It could spark a thing.
There was talk that there was going to be a sequel to this film focusing on the werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they first said that not long after this film came out, and I don't think anything's been done about it since, but I would like to see that.
Yeah, but in the meantime, Rhys Darby did do a short series called Short Poppies.
So good.
I've never seen it.
So good. It was on UK Netflix. I don't know if it still is, but it was so good.
Fantastic. It's like you focus on six different characters, and Rhys Darby, he's a funny, funny guy.
Yeah, it was like a mockumentary with a guy called David Farrier, who's a legit New Zealand documentarian.
Yeah.
And he goes to this little village in New Zealand where he meets these six different characters on six different episodes, but they're all played by Rhys Darby. It's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I need to see this. Yeah. Please still be on Netflix.
Yeah, or if you catch any of Rhys Darby's stand-ups, the first one he ever did, he's actually a very good, he does sound effects.
Oh.
And they're amazing. He's really, really good at it.
Is he as good as Michael Winslow from Police Academy?
Oh, I don't know about that.
No one is.
Or Mark when he did a helicopter last year.
That was good.
I felt like I was in Apocalypse
Not
Now
one
when I listened
tweet
back.
Or anything about that. I thought that was going to get some good response.
Yeah, I was expecting job offers, really.
I know.
Get some more sound effects in.
Yeah, I'll do one before the end of this episode.
Excellent.
I'll have to think what I can do.
Nice.
Have I done a machine gun?
No, not yet.
It's brilliant because it could have been the machine gun that was on the helicopter you did previously. So it's all
good, that, isn't
interlinked.
Oh,
interlinked.
My God.
I know.
Wow, I just need, like, if we could get, like, Marlon Brando in and, like, start carving up a cow or something.
That's it. You're there, aren't you? Next week I'll do a cow.
I understand now what people who were in Vietnam felt like. I know exactly how
those
they feel.
The sounds
now.
Are there all day. They never go away. But yeah, don't use that. We will find out if you chop that and use it in a big blockbuster coming up soon. I do not want to hear it in any future war film. That was good, wasn't it? Pretty good.
Yeah. I think we've digressed a lot, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, I think what has been mean said, you know, it's a nice, fun film. I think I've said all I needed to say. How about you guys?
Yeah.
Short film, short rewatch.
Short but sweet.
Love it.
So Ben, give me a score, please.
It's an 8 out of 10. Great fun. Love it.
Yep, absolutely love it. 8 out of 10. Can't go wrong.
Hey, let's make it 3 in a row. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. So What We Do in the Shadows gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10. So whose rewatch is it next?
Of course it's Ben.
I can't be pissy about that.
Why don't we ask Ben? What is this turn? Oh, okay.
One of the things I love about the rewatch, I love being able to introduce people, and by people I mean you two guys in the room with me here and all of our listeners around the world. I love being able to introduce you to films that you might not have seen or may not even have heard of. And that's what I'm going to do this time round. Now, Mark and I, and Gemma, I know you're getting into it, but Mark and I are long-term fans of Danny McBride and his writing and producing partner, Jody Hill. We are huge, huge fans of Eastbound and Down, aren't we, Mark?
Kenny Powers is one of my favourite all-time characters.
Kenny fucking Powers, man. He's so good. And Gemma, you haven't seen Eastbound and Down yet,
have
you?
Not yet. No. I will be.
And their most recent show is Vice Principals, which, again, we're loving. Season 2 has just started this past week on Sky in the UK, so I've only seen the first episode, but we're loving it so far. And I believe, Gemma, you've started having a look at it?
Maybe.
Yeah, good. Maybe.
That means she's not done anything.
So we're very much on board with their whole oeuvre, which is a French word.
Yeah. I like it.
Look it up, yeah? Look it up.
Cercle bleu.
So what I wanted to do is go right back to where they began, their first collaboration, the first time McBride and Hill worked together, and it was on a small, independent, dark comedy film called The Foot Fist Way.
I've heard the name, but I've never seen it.
That's what I would have thought.
I'm looking forward already.
So in 2 weeks' time, The Foot Fist Way. it's time for the final round of our incredibly popular game show, What Up?
Ow!
Ow, I'm mad to say. So the way this works is there are going to be five films, and for each film, I'm going to give you five words. Each of those words is a clue to the film. After one word, you've got to shout out the right answer. Shout out the right film. If you get it right after one word, it's 5 points. If you get it right after two words, it's 4 points, so on and so forth. Do we all understand the scoring system? Mark, I'm looking at you. Do we understand?
I like we've got one. So an achievement.
Now, having played two rounds already, Gemma and I have won a round each. So, Mark, it is really imperative that you go for it. Are you ready to go for it?
Always. In the words of Corey Feldman, I'm ready to go for it forever. I don't know if that's a line, but it should be. It probably would be.
Yeah, it'd be on one of the songs on Former Child Actor, is arguably his greatest record.
You don't know your stuff. It's actually angelic to the core.
Ah, that's a shame.
Yeah, that was his earlier work. But yeah, let's not ruin too much about that because it's my skip to the recommend this week. So I don't want to talk too much about Corey's backlog.
Spoilers?
Yeah.
So are you ready to get started?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So your first film, your first word, guitar.
I'm not going to risk it. Are you going to risk it, Mark?
I'm going to be sensible, even though I've got an inkling. I just know.
Yeah.
It's the first film. You don't need to shoot your wad quite yet.
No.
Your second word, vomit.
Oh, Gemma.
Go on, Gemma.
This is Spinal Tap.
Correct.
Don't get cocky.
Don't get cocky, kid.
It could backfire, but it won't, and you'll win about 20-0.
So Gemma got it on guitar and vomit. The other three words would have been glove, 11, and Stonehenge.
Brilliant. That's quite a nice, easy one, to be fair.
So easy, you didn't get it.
Look at that. Oh, mate, she's just mugged you off there. Mate, you're like a right man.
I'm just letting her do it. I'm trying to come across as the nicer, bigger person here. So
bigger waste. Sorry, I should be impartial. I'm the Games Master. Sorry about that.
Can you hear this, guy? The bullying that I get on a week-to-week basis. Throwing it to each other. Oh, we've got to give it Mark this week. It's his episode, so he has to choose a topic. Bullying. Childline.
Gemma, should we do a spin-off podcast called Skip to the End of Mark's Career with Skip to the End?
I'm listening.
Good luck editing that, Gem, yeah? I can't even download an MP3, says Gemma. Anyway.
All right, hang on.
That's
right.
Behind the scenes.
Hold up. Bullying? What the fuck did you call that?
Let's carry on.
All right, let's get back on track.
You know so, I love you.
Film number two. Are we ready for your first word?
Come on.
Clown.
I'm not going to have
a go. I thought you were going to have a punt there, Mark.
No, because you did it on the last episode, the big famous Pennywise film.
doesn't mean we've not done it again. There have been two versions.
You've mentioned that. Shaftness that
know,
bad.
Right?
Your second word.
Okay.
Cliff.
I'm going to abstain. I'm going to wait for the next clue.
Next one.
Yeah.
Wheelchair.
Oh, Gemma.
Gone.
Oh, no. Is it Mac and Me?
It's Mac and Me! Fucking hell.
Oh, Mark, you let me down there, man.
Jesus Christ.
Should have got it on Cliff. I think Cliff and wheelchair. Just think about that. Cliff.
Next one was McDonald's.
So Gemma had it from clown, Cliff and wheelchair. The next two words were alien and Skittles.
Oh, I'm gutted.
So, Mark, you're losing. Right. You're 7-0 down at the minute here. It's not great, is it?
No, but anything can happen.
And we've still got three rounds to play.
Yeah, no. I think Corey's probably got a song called Anything Can Happen.
Definitely.
Corey Feldman writes songs about you.
You should.
Oi, Disconnected is a masterpiece. You've got Spotify.
Ben, it writes itself.
It is.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Are we ready for the third film? Your first word. This one's easy. Gun.
I can't.
Mark.
Mark. Oh, wow.
I'm not.
No. All right. I'll let you rescind that. That's fine. Your second word, vent.
Mark.
Go on.
Die Hard.
Yes. Well done, Mark.
Yes.
So Mark got it from Gun and Vent, so he gets...
A little bit of respect back.
He gets 4 points. So, mate, it's all to play for. You're well in this. The other words would have been Vest, Christmas, and Yippee-ki-yay.
Beautiful. Imagine someone didn't get it from that.
Are we ready for round four?
Okay.
Feel a bit more up for it now. Yeah, there's still a chance.
Yeah, you're only three behind now.
Yeah.
You're all in it now. Wallet.
No.
Any ideas?
I can't.
No.
Your second word, watch.
Mark.
Go on.
Pulp Fiction.
Yes!
Well done. Yes! Mark storms into the lead on 8 points. Well done, kiddo.
If you can still hear, that's Mark is currently leading.
So Mark got it from wallet and watch. Well done.
Well done.
The final three words would have been briefcase, afro, and gimp.
Call the pounder. Right.
Oh, wow. This well is done. Fantastic. So Mark is 1 point in the lead with 5 points left to play for in the wow. final film.
How tense now.
Are we ready, people?
This
we ready?
Yeah. Okay.
Your first word, potato.
No, I'm going to hold. Sorry.
I kind of want to. Just to
you, don't, you don't need to,
no,
dude.
Know,
you're in the lead.
Know,
play it cool, play it cool.
I know, but then she goes now. It's all...
That's true.
Okay,
that's true.
Let's risk it.
Okay. Your second word, pig.
Gemma.
Yes.
Toy Story?
It is Toy Story!
Good work.
Thank you.
That was good.
I thought you were going to get it. I genuinely thought you were going to get it.
Do you know what I was
going to
go with?
Go on.
Sex Lies of the Potato Man.
That's my second choice.
I know. I thought he's going to absolutely shatter like, and pick that yeah. classic.
It's like, he doesn't mean animal pig, no. does he?
So Gemma has won this round 11-8, which means you are the overall champion. Oh. Just so you know, the other words we were going to have for Toy Story were dinosaur, cowboy, and spaceman.
Oh.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've done all pretty well
there.
That
was
there.
Really
yeah.
fun. You know what? Massive respect to you because you did good.
It was a good fight back, Mark.
Yeah,
you nearly did
yes.
it.
Nearly.
But you fell at the final hurdle.
And, you know, coming second means shit, doesn't it, really?
If you ain't first, you're last. No. That's what Ricky Bobby says.
That's what it's all about. I think Jack said that as well from Raging Bull.
Jack Wamata.
Yeah. So what do we do now? This is...
Oh, I'll tell you what. We've got a great, brilliant quiz coming up next time round. We've not invented it yet, but I'm sure it'll be great and brilliant. So stick around for that in 2 weeks.
We wouldn't be the Skip to the End podcast without the good old listener questions. So let's kick things off with in-session films that have specifically said, Ben, this is a question for you.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the Deckard human replicant debate?
Before I answer, I just want to say that in-session films are a great damn podcast.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. They do the same kind of thing as we do, but over in the States. Love them. Listen to them, please. Now...
How long have you got?
I know. I don't know because... There are things in the first film that play both sides. For one thing, he has a longer lifespan than the Nexus 6 four-year lifespan. So you think, oh, he's not a replicant. But then he has the unicorn dream and Gaff makes the little unicorn origami. So you think, oh, he must be. In this film, there are bits where he's with Wallace and Wallace says to him, you know, I think you were engineered to fall in love with Rachel. And then we also find out in this film that there are Nexus models, the 8, that has an unlimited lifespan. So maybe he was a prototype of the Nexus 8. I don't know is the answer. I don't know. And also, I kind of think it's fun not to know. It's more fun to still be debating that 30 years on with a new film that didn't answer it one way or the other. I'm happy they didn't definitively say one way or the other whether he is or not. And I love the line when Wallace presents him with that theory that he was engineered to fall in love with Rachel. He went, I know what's real.
Oh, God, that's badass, isn't it?
Love it.
You've also been asked by 3 listeners this week...
Mm-hmm.
What should happen now? Should they continue after 2049? You kind of touched on this on the main review.
My immediate answer is no. I think they've as I said, they've hit the ball out of the park twice, and I think you just risk diminishing returns. That said...
If it's Denis Villeneuve again...
Yeah, if it's Villeneuve again, if you've got... I mean, you know, I think Gosling died at the end, so I don't think he'd be back. But you're going to have more Neander Wallace. I want to know more about him. But I don't know that I'd enjoy a film about the Replicant Uprising. I think you're getting into Hunger Games territory. Did you see the third Hunger Games film?
Oh, God. I haven't, to be honest.
I've not seen any of them.
Yeah.
Finally, as well, for Ben, Tim Coleman said there's 7 cuts right now of the Blade Runner movie. You can buy them on Blu-ray. There's like so many box sets and different ones, the final cut. Yeah. Please tell me, in your opinion, which is the very best cut?
Easiest question I've ever been asked. It's the 2007 final cut. It was Ridley Scott's True Vision. The original theatrical cut, the studio got nervous and made him put this god-awful voiceover on it. He did a director's cut, I think it was in 92, something like that, but he didn't have the time to put all his... you know, will and being into it because he had other projects going at the same time. So the final cut is how he truly believes the film should be seen. So watch that one.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to be back on this now, Gemma.
Hey,
no, just more for me.
Yes,
please.
The Ben Show.
I realise this show's finally clicking now.
Skip to the Ben. Yeah.
It's taken 81 episodes, but we're in a groove.
At Warriors, but the I is a number one.
Oh,
I like
see what
that.
They did there.
Yes.
Oh, that's smart.
How do you guys go about when people ask you your favourite film of all time? Because let's be honest about it, it's not an easy question and there are so many different genres. Is it actually an easy question for you? It is a tough one because we announce our favourite films,
yeah.
But are they really when you think about it? Are you locked in?
Do you know what? I think I would say it is an easy question now, purely because we have an outlet to discuss why films are our favourites. If you didn't have a podcast that you've been doing for 3 years talking about your favourite films, it probably wouldn't be so easy, but we get to verbalise it. So it does feel easy to me now, but it might not if I didn't do the podcast.
I get to the point now where I never decide if it's Jaws or The Thing, and that's the truth. One day it's Jaws, one day it's The Thing. I can never actually lock it down. If I had to and there's a gun against my head, it would be Jaws. But then I see stuff and I'm like, God, that's the best film ever made. And it's not.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's like the Goonies usually.
Yeah, Mac and Me.
Gremlins 2.
No, I like Gremlins 1, but it is tough. But I'll say it now, it's definitely Jaws.
Until it's not.
Until tomorrow.
Yeah.
I always think that if I was to die tomorrow, what would be the five films that I would want to watch? So I kind of base it on that. I think of those films that I would definitely want to watch straight away, and it usually doesn't change. But yeah, I mean, it's so far. I mean, this year's been a really good year for films so far. I mean,
what is your favourite film of all time? The locked in number one.
Locked in number one, The Shining.
100%.
100%. Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
At Brinky121 has said, have you ever seen a movie that was amazing but the trailer was terrible?
Oh, Lord. Have you ever seen the original 1977 Star Wars trailer?
No.
No.
Go on YouTube. It's on YouTube. And it's you look at that trailer and you think, that's not a film I'd ever want to watch. It completely missells what the film is. It's god-awful. Watch it.
Oh, have you ever seen the trailer for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Yeah.
It makes it out like it's some kind of rom-com. It's like you've got ELO's Mr. Blue Sky playing over it. But when you actually watch the film, it's this utter heartbreak of trying to get over the one you really love. So, I mean, the film like completely shits on the trailer.
For me, it's The Abyss. The trailer makes it look like a nature documentary. Honestly, it looks the most boring thing in the world, and the film's an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable, and that should be a rewatch one day.
It is
absolutely
awesome.
The Abyss is cool, but on that tag, did you ever hear about the woman who sued the studio who made the film Drive? Because when she saw the trailer, she thought it was like a Fast and Furious type film.
What?
Rather than, you know, a distraught Ryan Gosling stomping on someone's head till he dies.
And not only that, Drive is based on a book.
I don't think she was the type who reads.
Oh, only the son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Roy Barrett to say, growing up, who was your Hollywood crush?
We've done this before.
But not with. I don't think we have with Gemma, have we?
I had a great big crush on Devon Sawa.
He was
the human Casper in the Casper film.
That's a random
wasn't
one.
Wasn't he about six?
No, he was about 16.
All right.
Okay.
I also had a thing for Bill from Bill and Ted.
That's
Alex
cool.
Winter.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
He had it going on, so, yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's Cameron Diaz. This is what we've talked about before. We've talked about the red dress when she walks into Stanley Ipkiss's bank in The Mask.
Yeah.
But I think after that, it would have been probably Gillian Anderson.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mine was Ali from Karate Kid, Daniel LaRusso's girlfriend. She was yummy. And I also liked the girl from Back to the Future, Marty's girlfriend.
Was that Elizabeth Shue?
What, the first one or the second one?
Both. Both were hot. But, you know, anyone on telly.
Anyone with a pulse.
Honestly, do you know who one of my favourite... My mum said I used to kiss the screen of the telly when I was a kid, like really young. It's mental.
E.T.
No. I think her name... Is it Gabby Roslin?
Yeah, she from The Big Breakfast and that sort of stuff. Yeah,
blonde hair. She was with Chris Evans. Yeah. She said I was obsessed. And I'd be like, I love her. I love her. And kiss the screen and everything.
And she has aged incredibly well. I saw her on something not long ago.
Wow. And Michaela Strachan. Absolutely
Michaela,
loved her.
Yeah.
Bloody loved her. Charles presenter.
Oh my God.
Yes. Mr. Glaff Arf Empty, and it is ALF. I've not mispronounced it. I haven't. Oh, God. What's your thoughts on Baumbach?
That's close enough.
That's
Baumbach. Yeah, that's fine. I'll give
ball
you that.
Bag.
Ball bag.
Teaming up with Adam Sandler for an apparently critically acclaimed movie. So they're back on track of No Stupid Comedies for Netflix.
Yeah, so Noah Baumbach has teamed up with Adam Sandler and I think Dustin Hoffman as well, I think Emma Thompson, for a film called The Meyerowitz Stories, which comes out on Netflix on Friday the 13th of October. And it looks really good. It's been getting great notices. People are saying that it's the best Sandler's ever been. And I'm excited because when he puts his mind to it, when he puts the effort in and he's just not having a jolly with David Spade and Paul Blart, he can actually act. So I'm genuinely excited by it.
Yeah, I'm all ears for it.
He'll do it, and we'll all be like, yes! And then he'll announce
Little Nicky
Grown Ups 3.
Little Nicky 3, yeah. Good luck, Adam. You need it. Ian Evans has said, who is your favourite cinematic weasel? So in this context, I like this. It's basically the character you wouldn't mind if they died in their own piss, is his own words. He's recently watched Green Mile, and his example is Percy, who's an absolute shithouse.
Oh, my God, he's
horrible.
Simon from True Lies, Bill Paxton's character.
Nice.
Because he's quite rapey. I mean, he effectively date rapes women and like coerces them into sex. But yeah, he can drown in a pool of vomit for all I care. Not Bill Paxton, because he was wonderful, but Simon.
I'm thinking Jurassic Park. You know, Donald, the lawyer, who's only out for himself with stealing money. But what the best thing is, he gets what's coming to him because he gets basically bitten his head off while he's taking a shit.
He becomes a jelly baby.
But I hate that guy. Absolute arsehole. I like that. Jelly baby. I like that.
You do bite the heads off. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Child abuse. It's funny you should have mentioned Adam Sandler just now, because the first thing I think of when I think of weasels is Rob Schneider as Fergie in Judge Dredd. Do you remember that little prick?
Yeah.
Dredd's little sidekick. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to kick him off a bridge.
Or punt him. The man, he punted that little shit.
Oh, Baxter.
You are my gentleman.
Aidan Wardle has said, what, in your opinion, is the most overrated or overhyped film in 10 years?
Can I say a film that I've not even seen?
Go on.
Avatar.
Yep, that's mine as well. Big pile of balls.
Have you seen it, though?
Unfortunately.
That's such a... For me, it's going to be Slumdog Millionaire, because it got 10 Oscar nominations and won about 8. I watched that film. It's meh. It should be called Slumdog Millionaire. That's what I would call it. It's terrible. It is an awful film.
It's funny, because I saw that in the cinema, and I remember coming out thinking, yeah, that was a really good film, because it's a feel-good film.
Yes.
And then it's one of those that if you give it half an hour to percolate through your brain, you go, yeah, but it's shit. I don't know how it won so many Oscars.
It's
just a film about how coincidences happen. Oh, well done.
Yeah, so is Mac and Me. That, he needed to get around in his wheelchair. Oh, an alien's here that can help him. Think about it.
That's the same.
Exactly
and amazingly, no Oscars. You know, there's no justice.
Remake Slumdog Millionaire with Mac. That Slum Mac Millionaire.
Slumdog
I want to see that. That was the one, I'm telling you now. Sponsored by Coke. I'm not saying anymore.
Oh, man.
Right. Like, Higgsy365 has said, what movie breaks the fourth wall the best?
Oh, God. Oh, Funny Games.
Oh, shit. That's really a hell of a good show.
It's only one section. It doesn't necessarily have to be the entire film, but that whole section.
The rewind thing.
Yeah. It shot me to the core. And I was angelic to the core.
Nice.
You wish. Ferris Bueller?
Yes. Yeah. That's a hell of a good one. Yeah. Wayne's World does it pretty well.
Oh.
And Ben hates it, but Deadpool. It does it well.
I don't hate it. The film, I've seen it like thrice now, and it's grown on me a bit. It's not a great film, but I kind of like it now.
Nice. Martin Summers, who was voted our number one fan, remember back then? What was it again? He did the poem.
Did the poem.
That was awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, amazing. Well, this is a good one. What is the best third film in a franchise or trilogy?
I don't know. I love Die Hard with a Vengeance, especially because Die Hard 2 wasn't that great. They just tried to repeat the first one, but on a plane.
Yeah.
But Die Hard with a Vengeance was its own thing. It was a different kind of film, and it's great.
Oh, I'm such a big fan of Toy Story 3.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Were you? Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's a good one. Or Shark Attack 3.
That's pretty good.
The other two aren't great. Yeah.
A close second.
Even though it's not great, you say, Ben, it's terrible, but I do like Back to the Future 3. It's nowhere near as good as the others, but it's all right. It's not like, oh, this is shit. If I do a trilogy, I'm not that disappointed.
It's a massive step down. To me, it suffers from the Godfather 3 syndrome. Yeah. In and of itself, it's a good film and better than a lot of other things, but it's not up to the standard of the rest of the trilogy. Yeah.
Point taken, it's going to be Shark Attack 3. Craig Thurlow has said, who and in which order would you put a human centipede together?
Nah.
He's actually used the centipede little emoji as well.
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah. No.
Amazing.
Good old Apple. Well, I suppose we're just asking really who are the three people we hate the most, whose anuses need to be sewn up to other people's mouths.
I'm going to go Russell Brand at the front.
Oh, nice. Good choice.
I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan in the middle, so he has to eat the shit.
Yeah.
And at the end, James Corden.
Wow, that's pretty good. The only problem with that is, with Russell Crowe...
Russell Crowe, no, I like him. Russell Brand.
Russell Brand being at the front, he'd still be able to talk.
Oh, shit. I know,
but it's a difficult game. But if you could try and put him in a kind of circle...
Yeah, we'll throw in Donald Trump and then...
I was going to say, can we do politics? Yeah. Because,
I'm having Trump in mind. For me, it'd be... I'd have Kanye West, Shia LaBeouf, and Donald Trump. I would have Trump in the middle, because the middle is the worst spot,
isn't it?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, we're so used to seeing Donald Trump talk shit that I'd like to see him eat shit.
Yeah.
I'd want to see Shia LaBeouf shit into Donald Trump's mouth. Yeah. I'd pay cash money.
I don't blame you.
I would put Kanye West at the back, because Kanye West also I want to see eat shit. I wouldn't ever want to hear him rap or speak again. And he used to kiss Donald Trump's ass when he was... Yeah. You know, the nominee, he said he'd vote for him. So there you go, you reap what you sow. You can now suck his shit for all eternity.
And eat your shit sandwich.
Yeah.
Nice.
And LaBeouf can go up the front because he's not famous anymore.
Steve Bannon in the back, Trump in the middle, Melania at the front because she never talks anyway.
Nice.
God, this got really political all of a sudden, didn't it?
Let's go with something a bit more just lighthearted.
Oh. Please.
Aaron Wildman has said... Has anyone put a movie out there that is so bad that after you watched it, you couldn't speak to anyone about it?
Oh, God. Hobo with a Shotgun.
Really that bad?
Oh, I hate it. Oh, God. So the first time I watched it, I lasted about 10 minutes because I switched it off when some guy had chains around his neck. It was fastened to a car. The car drove off. His head popped off. And then this prostitute with a bikini and a furry coat came over and started dancing around in the blood like it was a friggin' one of those water things that had just gone off. I was like, I'm done here. The film is gash.
I've got to say, this sounds rad, man. This sounds my cup of tea.
It's shite.
That's good. It's really good.
It's fucking terrible.
I've got the steelbook. It's bloody good.
It's an abortion of a film.
It's weird. I think the one for me that when I came out the cinema, I was so angry I couldn't speak, was the American remake of Old Boy.
Oh.
It pained me so much. But that said, since then, I've been trying for about 2 years to get Mark to watch it. Because I need you to see it so we can discuss how bad it is. But you'd veto it.
I wouldn't.
Actually, you don't have a veto left.
No.
Because you got overruled on your veto powers when you picked us to do 50 Shades.
Oh, bollocks.
Yeah, so you don't have a veto. Gemma and I still have one in the bag.
But at one point, that was our most successful ever episode, so it was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Interstellar. I went to the pub with Ben after. I had to talk about it a few days later on the episode, but my God, I didn't even look at you or talk about anything. We just were like, do you want a beer? Yeah, me, yeah.
I remember I remember it was me, you, Adam and Nick, and we stood there just sort of looking at the ground, disappointed.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I have watched it again and it's grown on me, but it's still, it's his Norbit. Put that on his gravestone. Bad for the Fish has said, is there any movie that turned out better than the book it's based on? That's a great question.
I would probably say Jackie Brown. I love the book Rum Punch by Elmore Leonard. Elmore Leonard's one of my favourite writers, and it's a great book. But if you then throw in Tarantino's whole thing, it just elevates it, puts it up a notch.
It's tough, this is. Off the top of my head, Stand By Me, I believe the film was better. Stephen King admits that The Mist was better, and I do agree.
Better ending. Yeah.
But for me, Jaws, because I didn't like the affair. In the book, Hooper gets with Brody's wife. And that would never have worked on screen. Mm. So I love that they didn't do that. They went off and they just kept them as kind of buddies and the woman was the perfect wife. So those three for me.
I love The Mist as a film and a book, but the film is much better. I really enjoyed Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo because it also cut out the first 50 pages of the film, which is so hard to read through. But I'm also a big fan of Let the Right One In. I didn't think it was at all possible to get the swimming pool scene nailed on as well as they did in the film, but they did it beautifully.
Beautiful. What choice is there for you? Oh, but he wants political here. He wants fighting on air. So Nicholas Cook has said, out of the three of you, which one of you would make the best film director?
Well, it's me, obviously, because I know all of my actors and characters' names.
Come on then, Jack. I quit. Oh, yeah. See you, Robert.
Yeah.
Obviously, see you, Robin. No, it's Robert. Oh, sorry.
Wait for me, Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Robin De Niro.
He'd quit the set. I'm like, Robin, come back. You can't even get my own fucking name right.
Don't want Robin, I'll get Alan Pacino in.
He's actually a good actor. He lives down the road, used to be a milkman. So before you start knocking old Al, he's all right.
You've seen Gemma's videos, so yeah, it's right. Ben, definitely.
Burn.
Oh my God. Wow, you think you know someone. I think we all have our own special powers. I think we would do it. I think all of us, to be diplomatic, all of us would be freaking good at directing. Yeah.
Final question comes from Brooksy17. If you were to ask a question of your listeners, what would it be? He has got something else as well, but I'm going to save it until we've answered.
Okay.
Mine would be, please go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review.
It's not a question.
Would you please go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review?
I think mine would be, if we were to start charging for this, how much would you be willing to pay? Because it is about time we made some buns off this.
Yeah, we need some cash money.
If we did a Patreon and you got stuff early or audio commentaries or you got an episode a week, would you pay £1? Because all the listeners, if they do that, we could quit our jobs.
Yes.
That's the truth.
Because my stepdad has said to me on numerous occasions when I tell him how many total downloads we've had, oh, if you just had £1 for every one of them. I know how much money that would be. You don't need to keep telling me.
We have a chart here in Ben's flat with every listener, like a scribble. We know how rich we'd be, but we like doing it for free.
We're joking, of course. We will never charge for this.
Yeah.
We might.
That is not a legally binding comment.
Skips the end, we'll charge £1 so they can quit their jobs.
I'd want to know, like, what else do they want to see? What else do they want
No, don't say that.
No?
Not you can't say that. What else would you like to see from Gemma?
Would you like to
remake of Showgirls, please, or Barbed Wire?
I am not doing a jacuzzi scene.
Pooch Wire.
Shame.
I love that.
Maybe I'd like to hear how they actually heard about us, because it's all good hearing about recommendations, but it would actually be good to... There might be some really good stories. We might have helped people out and...
Yeah, man, tell us. Tell us how you got into Skip to the End, you know, at STTE Podcast on Twitter or facebook.com/Skip to the End Podcast. Let us know.
The best one will win a prize. Oh, this is what I would ask you. If we put on a screening, would you come and watch it? That would be a good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, around the Midlands area, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
So this guy is also, in his real life, is called John Brooks, but I got it as Josh Barnes. He's had lots of names. He has said, between the three of us, if we come up with a new name for him with the initials of JB... Yeah. He will change his Twitter handle to it for the rest of the year.
Jeff Buckley.
Jack Bauer.
Jeff Bridges. Should we give him something bad?
James Bond.
No, we can call him. It could be like Jerker Burker.
Jizzy Bollocks.
Should we go with Jizzy Bollocks and see if he does it?
Jizzy Bollocks.
Jizzy Bollocks. There you go. So keep your questions coming in or suggestions of your Twitter handle. The best way to get is Ben has just mentioned, Twitter, Facebook. Email us as well, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. Just go on skiptotheend.co.uk because that's the best site out there for any podcast in the world. And on there, you've got all our links. And we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast, but of course the end is never the end. We always have one final feature for you here in the outro, and it is Skip to the Recommend. It's where we come to you with our favourite pop culture recommendation of the week. It doesn't have to be something new, it can be something old that we've only just experienced, but it's something that we want to share with you and hope that you will experience it too. Gemma, what's your pick this time round?
Well, this is a little bit different because my recommendation is actually what you two guys have recommended me outside of recording.
Oh, yeah.
So, guys, it's a TV show and it's Vice Principal.
Yes! Weirdly, I was going to bring this, but I thought I won't. When he started talking about it earlier, I was like, thank God.
Yep. I bought it instead. So for those of you who have not heard of Vice Principals, please go check it out. The rewatch for the next episode, The Fist Foot Way, is by the same guys. So it's created by Danny McBride and Jodie Hill. And it stars Mr. McBride himself and Walton Goggins.
Oh, so good.
If you don't know who he is, he was the guy with the wide eyes in the Quentin Tarantino film, Hateful Eight, that we didn't really like. But he was also in The Shield, which is a badass show.
The best cop show of all time.
Mm-hmm. They're Vice Principals. Neil Gamby and Lee Russell, who compete against each other initially when the principal has to step down and care for his dying wife. Believing one of them is going to get the top dog job, a new principal instead steps in, Dr. Belinda Brown, and they decide to team up to overthrow and get rid of her by any means possible. Now, when I say that, you think, oh, they're probably just going to write us some notes or something. No, they really go balls to the wall out. I mean, it includes things like getting her drunk, arson, att- just it goes completely out of control, but it is a very funny comedy show.
And when you say arson, you mean burning a house to the ground.
Yeah, like destroying artifacts, artwork, and it all stems from dropping a mug. And then the rage unleashes. But the first few episodes are very raw humour. It's almost, with a new show anyway, it's always the opportunity to flesh out the characters and get to know them. But as the show goes on, my goodness, I was not expecting a lot of sort of heart and compassion from these characters as well. I mean, especially Danny McBride's turn. He's the one. He is the centre of the universe at the show. He's absolutely fantastic. His comic timing is just perfect. But when he gets to the real serious stuff involving his daughter, didn't expect that at all. But it is brilliant. I do know that you mentioned this earlier. The second season has started.
Yep.
I am watching the second season now, so I am bang up to date with the UK. And it's just a great partnership with both McBride and Goggins. It's just great, and it's just thank you for recommending it to me. So it's nice to actually have recommendations from you guys too, so thank you.
It's nice that you actually listen to us for once.
Ah!
Danny McBride is a stealthy motherfucker, man, because everyone knows how funny he is. He's a great comedian. He's a really blustery, loud, big roles, you know, kind of guy. Everything you see him in, he's big and bold. But when he can be dramatic, or when he needs to be dramatic, he's very good at it.
It's brilliant.
You know, look at Alien Covenant. We know that's not a great film, but that's a purely dramatic role for him. And he knocks it out of the park. He's really good in that. You've mentioned Vice Principals, and again, something we mentioned earlier, Eastbound and Down. Kenny Powers is this big, blustery, bold guy, but when the drama is needed, he's so good, McBride.
You need to watch that as well.
I
think I prefer it to Vice Principals.
Yeah, really? me too. It's better.
It's magical.
Yeah.
Do you feel a bit robbed? Because Ben did the same to me, recommended it, I loved it, I went and watched the whole of season one, and now you're playing the waiting game for new episode each week, and I hate it. Yeah. I just want to watch 10 in a row.
I know, I'm really gutted now.
It's tough.
I know, and obviously after the cliffhanger of the first episode,
yeah.
I think we went out a few weeks ago, didn't we, for dinner, and I do remember you saying about there's one particular scene involving a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah.
And I know which one it is now. You're right, it's fucking funny.
Hey, there with your multiple cirrhosis. Ain't nobody got multiple cirrhosis. Yeah. It's so funny.
But get up!
I don't give a fuck about these ducks. Walton Goggins is so good. I've been a huge fan of his since The Shield. As I say, it's my favourite cop show of all time. It's amazing. It was also in a show called Justified with Timothy Oliphant, which is another really good cop show, a sheriff, kind of like a US Marshal type show. And then he was one of the few good things in Hateful Eight. Everything he does, he's brilliant. And the character he plays
Lee Russell.
He's this dandy. Like, he's a straight guy. He's married, but he's just such a, you know, this loose, like, kind of flouncy dandy guy. And he's so funny.
Oh, he's such a slimeball at the same time. Yeah. He's so two-faced, and he's really nasty piece of work.
Yeah.
But obviously we get moments where you find out he does actually have a little bit. He's not purely made of tin and steel, but he's such a slime ball.
It's amazing.
It is great.
And I'm just looking forward to the next episode on Sky this week.
Oh, yes. And Bill Murray is in the first episode.
Bill effing Murray.
If that's not a reason to watch it, I don't know what is.
Good work.
Thanks, guys.
I'm not going to announce mine just now. I just want to say while we're talking about this that Ben recommended off the last episode or the episode before American Vandal.
Yeah.
Once you recommended that, I went home and I was like, oh, do you know what? Before bed, I'll put one on. I just want to, because it was in my head. I just listened to him say, I was like, this is weird. Like talking about spray painting dicks and this whole thing. Within 2 days, I watched all 10 episodes or whatever, the 10, is it 10 or 12?
Yeah, it was 10,
and
yeah.
It's one of my favourite things I've seen this year. I think it's absolutely incredible. The amount of time and production they put into this. If I tried to sell it to anyone at work, by the way, you should watch this documentary. It's about these kids that spray paint dicks on cars and then they're trying to work out who it is. Mark, grow up. No, watch it. It was the best thing you've recommended yet. I absolutely loved it.
Same here, stormed it through 2 days. Thank you.
Pooch said the same thing to me before we went to the cinema on Thursday. Yeah. Everyone I've recommended it to, you two and my best mate Dan, have said the exact same thing. I got a text from Dan at like 3 a.m. going, I've just watched all of them. It's brilliant. You are right. It is that good.
It is. That whole that recreation of when they're episode 2 with the end of the boardwalk at the camp. Alex Stromboli.
When she's wanking him off.
Everything, even the analysation of the way he's eating a hot dog and the way the eye contact is looking at Cox.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm going to watch it again.
Me
it's
too.
So good. And it was so underhyped.
Yeah.
You know, did you see any adverts for it anywhere?
No,
I literally, the only thing I saw was a trailer at the end of another Netflix series. I'd got to the final episode of something, I don't know what it was, and there was a trailer. I can't believe how undersold it's been. Because you, Mark, you've just said it was one of the best things you've seen this year on TV.
Definitely.
For me, it is right now the best TV show I've seen in 2017.
That's love amazing, isn't it?
It's a big statement, but I'm going to have to agree with you. It's fantastic.
I love that we're doing exactly what we did on the last episode, but even more. Yeah. We're just reinforcing it.
Yeah. Yes, totally worth it.
Well, on the last episode, I was a bit conscious, and I'll be honest, when you come and recommend stuff, you're like, God, I really hope people don't go, what are you doing? This is useless. And to do music is so personal, but the response on Brand New was amazing.
Oh,
I saw
huge.
Loads of people.
Oh,
one
so
of the
many.
Most popular yet.
Yep, and can I say, it is actually on my car. I listened to it on the way up here, and the first track that you recommended...
Lit Me Up.
Yeah. That
you
is...
do Lit Me Up sometimes. See, we're nice sometimes.
Sometimes.
Suck me up.
Brown nose.
Suck me up. The new single from Brand New.
He has to ruin it.
I know. Every single time.
But I'm going to go with music again. I think I'm just going to strike while it's hot. So yeah. It might be a risk and backfire. But this is a band called The War on Drugs. I don't know if you've heard this band.
I've heard the name. I've never heard anything by them.
Right, okay. So the album, it's about their third or fourth album. It's called A Deeper Understanding. So when I was in New York, I was talking to a guy in a bar and he was asking me what music I like. And I was like, Pearl Jam, I love Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen. These artists.
R.I.P. Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm. It's too soon to even mention it. I just, that hit me hard. But these artists are huge. And he said, have you checked out A War on Drugs? And I was like, no. And he's like, if you basically got Springsteen, Dire Straits, Tom Petty, put them all together, this was what it would sound like. And I was like, yeah, all right, mate. Went home, listened to it, bought the album that day. Recommended it to my friend Darren, recommended it to my friend Stuart, and both of them bought the album the same day. Listen to the song called Pain, okay? They're from Philadelphia. You will not get tickets. They've sold out a UK arena tour or whatever already. They're huge, and you just won't get to see them. But listen to the song Pain, and I think that's the best representation of their music. If you don't like the song, you're not going to like them. You're not going to like the band. They're not going to grow on you. Listen to the song once. If you love it, I'm honestly saying you'll just be infatuated with them. The album from start to finish is one of those ones where you put in and you haven't got to flick tracks, and that's rare nowadays. Corey did it with 22 tracks on Angelic to the Core.
And Still Searching for Soulmate.
That it as well. But not many bands. Cemetery Piss did as well.
That's true.
But
and Weir Goat was pretty
good.
Their debut
Goat
was
semen.
Unreal.
But apart from that, you don't get many bands that you don't flick tracks, and that's true. There's always that wasn't good. This album is phenomenal. Please listen to the song Pain and tweet me and let me know what you think, because amazing.
I'm going to do it. I've heard them for a number of years. I know they've been doing the rounds. So
I think this is the one album I like more than the other stuff. I think they've found themselves now, and this is a proper yes.
I will be streaming this.
A lot of the sort of entertainment websites I read a lot of the music reviews, and they get a lot of good notices. People big them up a lot.
Good. So let me know what you think on social media. And to finish things off, Ben?
I'm going to go with a person.
Oh.
A human being. And it's a chap called Ryan Brown. Ryan Brown is an artist and writer for comic books. And I've got into his work in the last couple of years, I would say, but especially in the last few months. And I'm just such a fan. The thing he's most known for is a comic book that he writes and draws. It's finished now. The run is finished. But it was called God Hates Astronauts. And it's one of the silliest, most out there comic books you will ever read. It's about a NASA-sponsored superhero team called the Power Persons 5. And their whole remit is protecting the world from illegal astronaut farmers. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That rings a bell.
That old thing, yeah. And the lead character is just your standard sort of Superman-type superhero, until one guy beats him in the head so much that his head expands and pops, so he has his head replaced by that of a ghost cow. This is the kind of thing we're dealing with. This is how crazy it is. But it's so referential. If you like reference-heavy comedy, you would like this. Read these books, because within the first few episodes of God Hates Astronauts, there are references to The UK Office. This is an American comic, by the way. The UK Office, Spaced, RoboCop, and The Room.
Sold.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny, so witty, and so fucking silly. And the art from Ryan Brown, I love. It's cartoony. I like comic book art that is cartoony. In this day and age, you get a lot of comic book art that is kind of photorealistic, and it's too real for me. Or you get comic book art that is impressionistic, and it doesn't look anything. I like it to look like a cartoon. I like... This is going to make me sound like a sexist, perhaps, but I like the women to be buxom. I like the men to have these big rippling muscles. That's the cartoony look I like in comic books, and that's what you get in this. And I love his work, and his writing is so funny. As well as that, he has also drawn a book that's ongoing called Curse Words, which is co-created by a guy called Charles Soule, who does the writing, and it's about a wizard who comes to Earth from another dimension to destroy it. But when he gets here, he realises he quite likes Earth and doesn't want to destroy it, and then he realises being an all-powerful wizard where he can get people to pay him to do wizardy things is better than destroying it and fucking off back to his other dimension. So that's what he does. And then there was another book called Bedlam, which I've spoken about before on the podcast, about a serial killer who has like a lobotomy and is cured, and then goes to work for the police helping them hunt other serial killers, but you never know whether he's actually cured or not. And Ryan Brown did some of the art for that, and I love his art especially. Is so quirky, but his writing is so much fun. Everything I've seen him do, and he's a fairly young guy, he's not been around that long, but everything I've seen him do, I've fallen in love with. Ryan Brown. Brown with an E on the end.
Bedlam,
God Hates Astronauts, Curse Words. Find everything he's done, imbibe it, love it.
Challenge accepted.
If you're Googling Bedlam as well, buy the Keen album. Is it Bedlam?
Bed-shaped.
Oh. Don't buy that. Skip not to recommend. Don't. That's a new feature.
Skip
where we
to,
pick something.
Not to the recommend.
Yeah, where we basically pick stuff, don't buy it.
Anything by the band Keen, who were an indie band, but without guitar. They had a piano instead.
Yeah. Don't ever listen to them. If you do, we will block you. We'll call it We Will Block You.
We will block you.
That's it.
New feature has been born. Right in front of your very eyes.
You've heard it.
Organic.
This is how we get it.
Organic.
It's almost time to go home. It's almost time to end this episode.
Yeah.
So what have we got on episode 82? A big number.
That's a fantastic question. Mark, it's your topic, isn't it?
It is. It's all about watching kids' films, and I'm talking live action. I know everyone's going to start tweeting, and I'm going to have to remind people not stuff like Finding Nemo. Yeah. I'm talking Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm talking Jumanji, the big live kids' films, specifically made for kids, but let's be honest, us adults bloody love them.
Yeah.
Most of my DVD collection.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Money and me! Yes!
No, I'm thinking, because you actually have the steelbook for Beverly Hills Chihuahua. That's what I'm worried about. That's not a joke, people. He does own that, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? I don't know why.
It was a Disney promotion. They sent it free.
Bollocks, you paid cash money for it. You lying motherfucker.
Gemma, help me. What's the...
what's the review?
It's a big one. We're going to be reviewing the latest Marvel film, Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, I like the roll of the R there. Ragnarok.
That's another big one for Ben.
Yeah,
it is.
I know.
Mate, Thor is my favourite Marvel hero on screen, and the trailers for this, man, they get me going.
I know.
They rev my engines.
It's going to be amazing.
Hey, and with Taika Waititi helming the film as well. I mean, we spoke about him on this episode's rewatch, so it's going to be interesting to actually have a whole review for such a prestigious film, so...
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Me too.
Our rewatch is going to be cool as well. You know, we're all now avowed fans of Danny McBride and Jodie Hill, so their first collaboration, The Foot Fist Way. Now, it is a small indie film. Many of you may not have seen it. You may not own it. You might not be able to get it in your local record. Do record shops exist?
Yeah.
In your local record shop. Yeah. Take a book token to the record shop and try and buy it. But if you can't, you can rent it on Amazon Prime for £3.
Oh, that's perfect.
Amazon Prime.
Yes. Amazon should give us something.
Big time. So please get involved. Do watch The Foot Fist Way. Let us know what you think on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, email, etc.
Make sure when you Google it as well, get Foot Fist Way, not Fist Foot Way.
Yes,
I've seen
totally
that. You can get that easy.
Don't put fisting, put fist, because that's a whole different ballgame.
It's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
It is.
That's a future
reel. It's really, really good.
Well, speaking of fisting, on our next movie masturbate,
nice,
we will be discussing our favourite performances of Seth Rogen.
That's
well done.
Cool.
Finally.
Come on. And we've also, we've got a new game as well. But hang on, I think I've got something I can bring to the play.
Have you got an idea?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
So tell you what I'll do in the next episode, I'll come up with a game, and I'll be Games Master, and see you guys sort of go head to head. How about that?
I like it. I want a bit of time off not to have to do any much work out behind the scenes. I'm bored, tired. I don't want to.
That sounds tremendous. We will take your listener questions, of course, so please do send them in. And also, part of our competition this time round is we want your best drawings of the Skip to the End team. Please wow us.
Draw
with your
to the
artistic
end.
Draw to the end.
Hashtag draw to the end. If you put that in your picture so we can find it.
Yeah, please do.
And I'm going to announce the winner of the Sonos. Sonos, that's Sonos, your Sonos. Best solution for sound in any room of the house.
So
yeah, I want that.
Is that their official slogan? Because if not,
no.
You've just coined a slogan. That was so crisp.
I love that.
Get a bit of the bunts from that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I like that.
And loads of other stuff.
Oh, mate, all the goodies that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. See you in 2 weeks. Breakdown. Go ahead, give it to me. Breakdown.
table.